if I read this correctly, Facebook is saying it doesn't matter if the story is true so long as it doesn't cause people to hesitate getting the vaccine?
The borderline vaccine framework, shocking stories, potentially or actually true, events or facts that can raise safety concerns.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Hey, May 25th, 2021. Thank you for joining me. I'm going to be going over at least four very important things today that I set aside intentionally, one of which I put off from yesterday's show that we're going to get into in regard to this weird brain disease thing that's in Canada, which ties back to this discussion of India and some the trial that was going on there a while back. But there's some interesting things I discovered today, very interesting, in regard to the numbers around certain things that very clearly seem to point to some sort of, you know, mistake or deception around the data. We're going to talk about some information coming from the FDA, specifically in regard to the emergency use authorization and what that really means. And we've talked about this a lot, but specific things today that show you that not only have they broken their own rules many times thus far, but that their own documentation clearly states exactly what they're saying is not the case today. It's typical. We've seen this throughout the entire process. But more than that, that there's a declaration of emergency across the entire country that is quietly renewed every 90 days that no one knows about, or at least that they're not making very public in discussion. And that tells you something, as we're no longer in an emergency, yet they continue to make us technically in an emergency so that they can rationalize the emergency authorizations for all of their experimental drugs. Makes perfect sense. But we're also going to get into more vaccine discussion, some of these really upsetting things that are happening. And I almost can't not report on these, even though the show may not be only about these vaccines, such as the idea of heart problems with children and how that's increasingly showing to be a problem. And we would have seen that if there would have been actual trials before all of this, and on and on and on. And we're going to get into some interesting discussions about the biodigital convergence as well, in this direction of the Great Reset, clearly. And a document that goes through all the new stuff we're going to be doing as we go forward that basically lays it all out for us. And again, at the end, talking about the number specifically around, as I said in the beginning, the information about lower respiratory infections in comparison with COVID-19 deaths. And interestingly, how there's a gap in between this information. And we'll show you as we get to it today. But to start off, I want to, as usual, go through a couple quick points. One thing I wanted to shout out right out of the gate was a great episode by James Corbett today called Anti-Ganda, kind of talking about the, you know, good propaganda, essentially, like using their game against them in an interesting way. Now, this is a really great episode that I recommend you watch for yourself. It's a shorter one. It's his solutions watch. It's sort of, you know, the second iteration of propaganda watch, where he's trying to focus more on solutions, which is fantastic. But there was one interesting thing he pointed out in this, which was this individual, Cherry B, who's been making this at what he calls the good propaganda, anti-ganda. And it's all about stuff like this: live free, release yourself, love free, reconnect ourselves, right? Drug free, choose yourself. Very interesting stuff. And I wanted to give her a special shout out today because I reached out just because I thought these were really great. And there's no political orientation. It's just good information to counteract the fake. Let's just say it is an alternative perspective that you're not allowed to talk about, which is just great to put out there today. And so she said she was going to try to send me some of these, even though you can print them out for yourselves. She was going to send me some she had left for the upcoming rally on the 29th in Franklin Square, which I will be speaking at. So I just want to give her a shout out. Cherry B, you're doing a great job. Now, going forward, I want to make sure we're all aware of something interesting that just happened. As the situation in Israel is not getting any better, as Robert has continued to cover, Israel's government continues to abuse the Palestinian people in every possible way and continue to pretend that they're defending themselves in every possible way, despite that legally being impossible, since they're an illegally occupied area. And the UN has always maintained that, and the Geneva Conventions make it very clear that an occupied territory has the right to armed resistance. Who cares about facts and law, though, right? Israel's defending itself. But the point is, in Iran, This was hours ago, which is interesting, by the way, that this tweet, let me just refresh this rule. Well, before I refresh it, it says explosion in Iran airbase near Tehran, IRGC being the Revolutionary Guard. Iran unveiled the new Gaza drone here a few days ago. For those that didn't see that part, this was a drone that was specifically, they called it the Gaza drone. It has to do with what's going on between occupied Palestine and the Israeli government. They're obviously in support of them, like anybody honest should be. Not even to say that that means their government is honest, but anybody anywhere who's honest with themselves can see that Gaza is an occupied territory that deserves your support. And suddenly there's an explosion at that exact location. Now, my point was, Israel has said it has the right to act anywhere and that international law does not apply. And here's the link that I include, because this is very easy to look up. Whether or not it's on Middle East Monitor or wherever else you want to find it, this was stated directly in an open, in the documents are there as well. They says they can, quote, legislate anywhere in the world, and that, quote, it's entitled to violate the sovereignty of foreign countries. This is a member of the Israeli government introduced this into the court. Point being, as I said here, they say this openly and that law doesn't apply to them. And recently it stated, as we do in the current context, that it would go after its enemies wherever they reside. We talked about this on the show, which very clearly shows you they don't think they're bound by international law. And I said, remember when the mainstream media inevitably tries to blame whatever this is on Iranian government incompetency, which is just, or whatever the other three things they have that they can say. Sure. Could it have been an accident? Could it have been somebody else? Sure. But I'm going to go ahead and say, in my opinion, based on what I see happening already, that this was Israel. My opinion. We'll see how it fleshes out. I'm sure Robert will have more on it. But let's just say, for sake of conversation, we 100% prove it's Israel. I can still promise you most likely nothing will happen, despite this being an overt, direct act of war, like so many other things that it does. Maybe this is being done so it can force the U.S. government into action where it's not really supporting Israel as much as you had seen in the past. But we'll see how this pans out. But any way you look at this, if this was committed by Israel or anybody for that matter, it's a crime, a very serious crime. And as somebody points out, I just wanted to see if that refreshed. It's weird that tweet was disappeared. Oh, yeah. See? Why is it unavailable? That's so strange. I mean, that's right there. The Twitter, and this is actually a perfect segue into the first discussion about Facebook and censorship. It's very strange that these kind of things are just kind of going, oops, disappeared, unavailable, even though it's clearly there. Or the fact that this can be shown in a bunch of other tweets. Very odd. But what this person had to say was, if this was in Israel, they would have blamed Hamas already. Great point, the Black Eastwood, because if this was happening in Gaza, let's say it was another bomb in Jerusalem or another a rocket in Jerusalem without any due diligence, without anything. Let's just say it wasn't a rocket. Let's just say it was on some other location. They would still be talking without any issue about Hamas, most likely, blah, blah, blah. Right now on the media, you won't even hear Israel mentioned. And if you do, they're going to call you a racist until that there's evidence. And then when there's evidence, they're going to say it's not true, which is just this rigmarole roundabout thing that happens every single time Israel's called out for something that they do that's illegal. But just recognize the one-sided nature of our entire media structure in the mainstream. I had a really great interview today with Tim Truth, who's been doing a really great job covering things that people are afraid to talk about. And I just have immense respect for that. Someone that's not afraid to objectively go over data about things the mainstream media labels as crazy fake news, such as this magnet discussion, which I'm totally on the fence about, which is still very interesting. But I'm telling you, there's something crazy around this discussion of magnogenetics and how they're using these different metal components and different things in regard to this exact discussion of vaccines. And yet there's plenty of very valid reasons why that might actually happen in regard to technology that they're currently testing for vaccine. But let's pretend like it's so crazy. I'm still not saying it's happening. It could be a complete psyop. But it's interesting. And nonetheless, Tim Truth is doing his due diligence, not saying we know for sure one way or the other, but simply doing what they're afraid or saying we're not allowed to do, which is simply discussing it, researching it, going over information, giving you material to research. Anyway, we go over a whole broad, it really just kind of became a discussion. I really enjoyed it. We just talked about all sorts of different things, some of which we didn't really get to in the title, but we just kind of went over a lot of it. And I highly recommend you check it out. I'm actually going to be airing. This was a Super U exclusive today. I'll be playing this probably on everywhere else tomorrow, most likely, or definitely tomorrow, but playing everywhere else. Going forward, One last thing I thought was interesting, okay, into this discussion of censorship, as we just saw on Twitter and everywhere else, and this is something Tim and I discussed in the interview, Disclosed says, fact-checking is becoming a bigger problem than fake news, which I agree with. But my point is, no. Fact-checking, quote-unquote, as it specifically pertains to establishment media, not that just generally checking facts is wrong, but as it pertains to how the media is using that concept, that is the fake news. That's an interesting thing to think about, right? That is literally the fake news today. And that's not because it's my opinion or because they're the side we're fighting against. It's because they're lying. And anybody who's actually objective can very clearly watch how they play these straw man act or these basic ad hominem attacks, straw man arguments, just everything they can to sidestep the actual conversation. So again, understand the fact-checking mainstream media, that is the fake news today. Not that you can't also have false information in anywhere in independent media or anywhere else, but that literally has become the fake news, and I find that just pretty humorous. And then one more thing before we bring this over into kind of, I guess, the COVID discussion, but just one thing I wanted to shoehorn in here somewhere was that this is very, 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 very telling. This is a huge red flag. And this is, you know, again, I know I've said this a bunch and we're trying to set up that together on off air. Whitney and I are going to be connecting about this in particular. I sent this to her right when I saw it and said, okay, we have to get on and talk about this. Anthrax false flag take two. Rand Paul. Of course it's Rand Paul. FBI assisting with investigation of white powder sent to Rand Paul's home. What does this sound like, guys? It sounds like the exact same obvious false flag, obvious psyop that was carried out around the 9/11 scenario as well. I was actually specifically talking about somebody today with David Meiswinkel and lawyers for 9/11 inquiry, because they're currently in litigation about the anthrax false flag. And I did a great interview with him. I should have remembered to pull that up. Check our website, not channel, TheLastAmericanVagabond.com, for David Meiswinkel's interview about this anthrax, or even Robbie Martin's interview. We did a great one about this as well. But the fact that this is such an obvious, transparent psyop manipulation, what went down here, how it was the people that were primarily against the Patriot Act, they were the ones that got sent this, and go, what do you know? It suddenly went the other way. Now, it's just, who knows how this is going to go? But we can all see Rand Paul is at the very least playing the role of the contrarian to the COVID-19 agenda. I don't believe it, simply because of the way it's one-sided, which the next point will make. But I just want us to understand this. These people cannot think outside their agenda. They, as I jokingly say all the time, and it's a little more nuanced than this, but these people have play one, two, and three. They just keep doing the same things over and over in a slightly different way, in a slightly different angle, with a little bit different people, and just pretending like it's different. A new regime change over here. Oh, look, they shot protesters. Weird. Oh, it turns out it was our military. Shh, can't talk about that. Over and over and over and over. But pay attention, because this is going to be something. A distraction. We're going to hear about this. That's my opinion, but we'll see where it goes. But bringing this into, it's funny. I just had something that I thought I was going to say after that. We'll see. Going forward, it's probably going to be something I have in two things ahead, like I did the other day. But bringing this into this discussion of the whistleblower for Veritas, Project Veritas. Now, as always with this, anybody who is lost in a two-party illusion, and by the way, on both sides of this illusion, you got one side that will take whatever this thing says as absolute fact beyond doubt, no matter what. Which is wrong. I mean, it's pretty hard to ignore real documents and whistleblowers that are stating this as verified people from the company. Let's be clear. I don't care who is saying it. That holds a lot of weight. But people will still blindly listen to what this says and take it as fact no matter what on one side of that illusion. And on the other side of that illusion, they will completely disregard anything that comes out on this platform of Project Veritas, no matter how valid it is, because it's on the wrong side. And because, don't you know, they take things out of context. Okay. Sure, you can say that all you want, but the reality is they're pointing to whistleblowers with documented information that you can prove came from these locations. So it's a choice to ignore stuff like this. The only reason I'm saying this is because I'm constantly trying to rattle free a couple more people from the two-party illusion. In particular, in this case, the people who think that this is fake no matter what, because they're on the left side of that illusion, right? That this is, shouldn't listen to this guy because that's a right thing. Open your mind and be a grown-up and realize information is has validity, or can, regardless of who says it or who shows it to you, okay? So let's get into this, and I played this clip in the beginning. By the way, I have to say that this guy I'm sure they did this probably because people somehow were able to find out who these people were based because the voice wasn't distorted enough or something. But God, I got to be honest, the way they distorted the voice in this is almost impossible to listen to. So just read, you can hear it, but read the subtitles and just take in what they're saying. The bottom line here is that the Facebook, just like we told you, actually, like I stated as my opinion long before this, that's now being vindicated. But then I also told you, because we saw it happening in real time, that they are censoring factual information under a guise of misinformation because it creates vaccine hesitancy. And they're going to show you in their own documentation that they know these things are in fact not false. But if it leads to false or vaccine hesitancy, they will remove it, which is what on this still shot right here. So let's bring up this video first and we'll go through it. And so I only have about 4 minutes of the full video. I recommend you watch the whole thing, as always. Always the smart thing to do. But this, let's watch the breakdown.
We have just obtained multiple leaked documents from inside Facebook, this time detailing a plan to curb, quote, vaccine hesitancy on a global scale.
Even having VH as the, like, you know, like they're literally giving you a number with a, like it's a category of VH. Like, you understand that that didn't just come up organically, which, by the way, they'll talk about briefly. Vent 201 laid this out very clearly, and they're following marching orders. But what's interesting is this didn't just start with COVID-19.
It was so concerning, it brought us not one, but two whistleblowers from inside Facebook who are ready to speak out on what this means for free speech and public discourse on their own platform.
I only listened to the first one, by the way. There's information in both, but I really just cut up the first one because the second one seemed to be a little bit more subjective about personal things and whatever. But there's plenty of good information across the whole thing. And they're both people from Facebook, so it's worth the time to check out the other half of it as well. But I only broke up the first one just for disclosure.
Facebook uses classifiers in their algorithms to determine certain content to be what they call vaccine hesitant, or they call it vaccine hesitancy. And without the user's knowledge, they assign a score to these comments that's called a VH score, the vaccine hesitancy score. And based on that score, we'll demote or leave the comment alone.
Now, I'm not actually sure how well this will translate for the podcast. It's probably really hard to hear. Bottom line is they're saying they give a specific score of vaccine hesitancy to your content. Now, in this specific discussion, and this is what I actually appreciate, by the way, they do this, is, and what the data can prove is that they're doing this around comments. But let's not pretend for 1 second that this does not apply to every other layer of content, including content creator, people that are posting content themselves, sharing content, direct messages. Like this has already been shown so many times around in every other context, whether it's YouTube or Twitter. This, we know this. Instagram telling you that they will watch what you write, even if you don't send it, and use it against you, right? This is all real stuff, right? So just as they're only talking about comments, just make sure you see the full picture of how this applies to, which we've already seen. Posting an article from this, The Last American Vagabond, and saying it's misinformation, despite it being completely cited, sourced to factual information from the British Medical Journal, or so on.
On the content within the comment.
Our first Facebook insider is a data...
Based on that score, we'll demote or leave the comment alone, depending on the content within the comment.
Our first Facebook insider is a data center technician who leaked us multiple internal documents detailing an algorithm test being run on 1.5% of Facebook and Instagram's nearly 3.8 billion users worldwide. The goal? To, quote, drastically reduce user exposure to vaccine hesitancy in comments.
Now, understand what that's saying, right? Drastically, always note the omission of any kind of true, false, accurate, inaccurate. It's simply reduce user, so everybody using Facebook, reduce user exposure to vaccine hesitancy in comments. So anybody anywhere that's expressing hesitancy, regardless of how valid, their effort is to just make sure people don't see that. How is that not dishonest? How is that not a violation of their own agreements? But the bottom line is they've already decided that anything that makes you, how long have I been saying this? You guys all watch the show. I've been saying this from the very beginning. Anything that is creating vaccine hesitancy, true or false, will be removed. And this is the proof.
in comments.
So basically, when they write this algorithm, it goes through Facebook content and it looks for certain keywords that are related to vaccination or, you know, not getting a vaccine, stuff like that. And it gives it a score, and the VA score means vaccine hesitancy, which is defined as being hesitant to get a vaccine, but not just like, well, I don't know, it's even, well, I saw a study that said that someone died that got the vaccine. That's vaccine hesitancy.
Right, and recognize they're showing you these things for those on the podcast. Like, you can see these documents. You know, this is just like he said, citing a study, a scientific study that shows that someone died, or even just citing information that challenges the safety. Like, and that's enough. True or false? And this is what's very telling. There was one thing I was just going to say that I forgot. What was it right here?
The VA score means vaccine hesitancy, like that. And it gives it a score, and the VA score means related to vaccination or, you know, not getting a vaccine.
So. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Just, it's an interesting point here. Look, this is a good example of why there is some validity for people out there that, you know, basically speaking code words. I know a lot of people that do good work that kind of maneuver these things. And like, we're going to pretend like they don't know, they haven't already just labeled your entire channel as whatever they want. But it's interesting to note that this is definitely how this works, at least on Facebook. So then you probably easily to note why I'm aggressively suppressed, because I openly talk. I don't hide anything that I say. I never will, for that matter, because in a way I feel like that's a small win for them. But my point was, you can see why some people might do that.
But not just like, well, I don't know, it's even, well, I saw a study that said that someone died that got the vaccine. That's vaccine hesitancy.
Well, one thing is for sure, the authors of this experiment, Juyo Hao, Nick Gibeon, Hendrik Townley, Amit Ball, and Matt Gills, are not low-level employees. In fact, one of the internal documents Project Veritas obtained was a Facebook flowchart that showed they're only a few clicks away from Mark Zuckerberg himself. Who makes these decisions?
These are teams at Facebook, and they call themselves, they work with what they call B2V, barriers to vaccination.
Barriers to vaccination. Right, because clearly they don't have a personal agenda, right? So their job is to remove barriers to vaccination. Not to check whether they're accurate or whether they're truthful or lies, but simply to remove anything that could be perceived as a barrier to somebody deciding to vaccinate. How incredible is this? Somebody's telling me that I'm, what, is the volume odd for anybody else? My voice sound high for anybody else? It's not higher than usual today, but somebody's saying that might be the case. I wouldn't be surprised, especially if you're watching on YouTube right now, which the question would be, why? Why are you there? Go anywhere else, please, now, as fast as you can.
So that's one of their core terms, is barriers to vaccination. And then the people on these teams, they call them health integrity teams. So there's a health integrity team for Messenger. There's a health integrity team for every system in Facebook.
Health and integrity team. Is this something that came out about after March 2020 and COVID?
No.
This is something that's existed.
Yes.
That's really important to think about. That, whether you want to talk about foreknowledge, whether you want to talk about any of the things we discussed leading into this and how it's developed, they built this out just like the Moderna platform, just like the AI plan for, or, you know, the legacy system discussion we had with Whitney Webb, just like the BlackRock bailout plan for the economy. Like, you know, really start piecing these things together in your mind and see how they built this out before they got here in every possible way. Right. I mean, just it's very clear that this was set up for the ability to control the flow of information specifically around health. Interesting.
Time. This kind of censorship sounds similar to shadow banning, when users are unaware their posts can't be seen, a term one of our own investigations coined when exposing Twitter.
I don't really know about that, by the way. just going to go ahead and say that. Pretty sure shadow ban had been used a long time before, but, you know, who knows? Maybe I'm misremembering. Anyway.
Just a few years ago. But this time, we're exposing Facebook and Instagram's methods to quash an entire side of a conversation.
Yep.
Arguably, one of the most pressing issues of the day.
I wouldn't even say arguably. Look, are we going to pretend here? This is the most important thing happening on the planet right now, period. Nobody even disagrees with that, because on one side, they think we're all going to die. On the other side, we realize we're all being manipulated. This is the biggest thing happening and the biggest conversation on the planet. And social media, with the help of your government, are literally controlling the conversation. Think about how much different this would be. Think about how much difference we're making, even though this is happening. Think about that for a second. Imagine if they weren't controlling this. With this, it would be over because the information would be there. People would see it. It would eventually, the truth would find its way and people would wake up. But because they're not allowing that to happen, we're still making it happen. We're still using flyers and you know, roundabout ways, and people are still finding it. And this is why they're so desperate right now, because they, even as they censor us every way they can, they're still losing to a degree. They're still not pushing this path. I mean, that's how I feel anyway. For all we know, this is all part of the plan. But at the end of the day, it's very obvious how aggressively they're trying to control this. And as he says, cutting off an entire side of the conversation. It doesn't matter whether you're an expert, doesn't matter whether you're a doctor, scientist, Nobel laureate. You can't have that opinion. How is this not the most obvious thing in the world?
According to these documents, Facebook tiers users 0 to 5 and a score 0 to 1. Can you talk a little about this tier system?
Yeah, so basically this is what they're using to structure how they're going to judge this content on a scale to how vaccine hesitant it actually is, or if it's explicitly discouraging.
So we have tier 2, indirect discouragement. And what happens when you are a tier 2?
So basically your comment is going to be suppressed.
If I read this correctly, Facebook is saying it doesn't matter if the story is true, so long as it doesn't cause people to hesitate getting the vaccine? What's your read on this?
The borderline vaccine framework, shocking stories, potentially or actually true, events or facts that can raise safety concerns.
That post was done by a user, and they've taken a screenshot and observed it
as
part of the tier system.
Right.
Yeah. What about this?
It can't be more obvious, right? I mean, this is very, very, very clear. Doesn't matter whether or not it's true. And you understand the point that they keep making is this is in their internal documentation. They're very open about this. Delete it if it creates hesitancy, true or not.
What's your read on this?
The borderline vaccine framework, shocking stories, potentially or actually true, events or facts that can raise safety concerns.
That post was done by a user, and they've taken a screenshot and observed it
as
part of the tier system.
Right.
Yeah. What about this gives them alarm?
How is this not scary? That would be considered indirect discouragement.
Indirect discouragement, which should be considered tier 2.
Right.
So this is an example of indirect discouragement of the vaccine.
Questioning the vaccine, questioning anything involving the vaccine.
And this was then a
just questioning it. That's it. Simply going, how do we know this is actually safe? That's enough. You're already downgraded. You're labeled as vaccine hesitant. Your comment will be suppressed, on and on and on. You're not allowed to ask that question in this so-called free country. I mean, really? this is incredibly obvious. And just because people out there think that we're all going to die, so this they're scared, and so they're okay with this kind of suppression, doesn't mean that it's okay. You could create another situation that was outside of the COVID context, and that same person would scream about how this is wrong. But because they're scared and manipulated by the government, they're okay with stuff like this. You can't question it. Since when can you not question your government? In an authoritarian dictatorship, I guess.
Promoted on Facebook. So this is another example of tier 2 indirect discouragement. Why don't you tell us why this would be indirect discouragement according to Facebook?
So this would be considered vaccine hesitant because they don't want people to see someone had a bad effect. They're not saying don't get the vaccine, but they're saying look at all this negative stuff that happened after I got the vaccine.
Right. Look at what happened. Right. Here's what happened to me. Fake news. We all see this happening. Somebody going on, a doctor saying, look at what just happened to my mother. Look at what just happened to me. And they say fake news. People attack them, say, you don't know for sure. You can't say that. Right? Joe at the corner store on Twitter is saying, hey, doctor, you don't know what you're talking about. Right? The guy that works at Walmart is screaming at this Nobel laureate saying, you're a fake news idiot. This is the world they've created. Right? And they're the smart science trusters. Right? it's so comically ridiculous where we are. They're simply saying, look at the CDC database and what it's showing. I continually state this is unverified. And that is something that gets you knocked down. You can't even point to real world data. How is this possibly honest?
So they're reporting facts, but truth doesn't matter.
No, right.
Because it doesn't match the narrative. So, and the narrative being, get the vaccine. The vaccine is good for you. Everyone should get it. And if you don't, you will be singled out.
Right.
As an enemy of society.
So now some people may claim that that's like hyperbolic or like a right wing, whatever. How that's literally what's happening. They're literally writing articles about how they can single you out and how they, and how by not doing this, you're threatening everyone's lives. But yet stating that like he did, we'll go, oh, that's very subjective and one-sided. Well, it's exactly what they're doing.
They are open about the fact that they essentially coordinate with the CDC here.
Right.
Of course.
Interesting. Very, very telling. I recommend you watch the whole thing. There's a lot in there that's important to check out. But just reflect on that for a minute. The realization that they're censoring truth. They're censoring scientific studies. They're censoring information coming directly from the people they're telling us we should listen to if it challenges or creates vaccine hesitancy. That's written in their own documentation. But yet, because we'll point this out, we'll show the MIT study that shows that we're not crazy, that they found in their study that we're in fact far more scientifically literate than half the people calling us anti-science, and yet nothing will change. Pretty interesting and scary, but shows you why this is why what we're doing is so monumentally important. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. points out U.S. government-funded vaccine research to the tune of $9 billion, spent $22 billion to support vaccine distribution, shelled out another $10 billion to expand access, $3 billion to spend on an ad campaign to manipulate your opinion. Right, that's now, understand. All of which comes out of your pocket in a situation that you don't need. The vast, vast majority do not need any of this. Now, also, as I keep pointing out, and the reality that they already have decided that if you don't like this thing, then you're crazy. You don't have the right to say you don't want it, because if you don't want it, that means you're deceived by conspiracy theorists, right? There is no situation where you can justifiably not want this thing. You're either confused, stupid, manipulated, or on their side. That's the clearest thing I can possibly say. You are not allowed to think what you want here. You're only allowed to think what they're saying. And if you don't think that, you're a danger. And they'll find ways to manipulate you. Right now, they're spending $3 billion out of your pocket while you can't feed your family. There's still plenty of people out there struggling to aim at you with campaigns to say, you're dumb and crazy. You need to get this thing. Or here's $1 million. Here's some ice cream for your child. Come in and get this thing. That's what they're spending this on. It is a manipulative propaganda campaign. As he writes in the subtitle, the U.S. government funded vaccine research to the tune of, it's just really the same thing. I think I just had it redundantly on there. I like to include the article, in fact, but I'll just do this then. Very important to understand that this is going to continue. There's no point where they go, okay, everyone who wants it got it. The rest of us have choice. Nope, not how that's going to go. They're going to go, well, we didn't get enough. So you're crazy and you guys are dangerous. And so now we're going to go back on lockdown or whatever. It's going to be coercive and manipulative as much as possible. And we all see it. It's literally already happening. And this is the discussions of things that they're already censored of, such as the discussion of the so-called leak, or more specifically, the bio research that both sides were working on together, and which is more likely a bioweapon than anything else if this is actually how this went down. And I'm not even sold on that. But what's frustrating to me is this is so obviously a one-sided theater show, guys. This is him. This is Rand Paul introducing, which, by the way, already passed, at least in the Senate, as I understand it, introduces an amendment banning gain-of-function research. Yay! Only in China. Boo! What a manipulator. That is ridiculous, because you're going to... Look, this should stop everywhere. China's just as dangerous in regard to the gain-of-function research as the United States government. But you know who's the leader in this? The U.S. government. Very clearly. So for him to pretend like gain-of-function is so dangerous, so stop China from doing it, clearly shows you that he is no... As I said, you see, if this was actually about protecting Americans, it would be an amendment banning gain-of-function research, period. Don't fall for this left-right paradigm manipulation. Your government is very much a part of this, and Rand Paul, in my opinion, is either not aware he's playing his role or is completely part of manipulating you. In any sense, you can't talk about the dangers of gain-of-function research and then pretend that we only need to stop the bad guy over there, and then pretend like our government hasn't been a part of some of the most obvious atrocities ever committed in living memory, including working with the very people that they claim were doing. I mean, on and on and on and on. I could go off on this stuff forever, but it bothers me that we pretend like this is actually some kind of pushback with DeSantis, with Rand Paul, with any of it. They're just playing the game. And this is just as embarrassing as anything else. Here is, I might have already shown you this, but I can't remember. Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, we did. Yeah, no, I don't know. In any case, I'll read it again. This is from Washington Post. How the Wuhan lab leak theory suddenly became credible. Really? With no new evidence, huh? So you guess, I guess you just went over that again and we're like, you know what? Maybe this is credible today. I'm a good journalist. Glenn's a good journalist. I just say what people tell me to say. Well, here is what the reality is here's what he said before, back when it wasn't acceptable to kind of quasi say that might be possible. I fear Ted Cruz missed the scientific animation in the video that shows how it's virtually impossible for this thing to do what you just said it probably can do now, even though nothing's changed. But I guess good journalists just blindly trust animation created for them like a child from somebody who's an authority figure. Look at that video, you dumb Ted Cruz. How come you not trust what they said? This is journalism today. Or the many interviews with actual scientists. Oh, I guess so they were all wrong? Were you wrong? Well, you're saying something different today. We deal in facts and viewers can judge for themselves. Yeah, you know what? We can, Glenn. And you and Ted Cruz are both a bunch of manipulative liars playing your parts. How stupid is this? I said, this is just embarrassing. How it suddenly became credible. And I just said, no, bud, you just took at face value what authority told you was the case instead of being an actual journalist until such time as they told you it was acceptable to discuss it. Then suddenly it became credible in their eyes. Not what I'm saying it is, but in the way they see it, it is very sad. It's pathetic. But as we bring this into the discussion about this current experimental injection that is being pushed, and we see that they're censoring information around things just like this, what we're about to get into, and how they're trying right now to desperately get you to look anywhere else. Don't look at the vaccine discussion that's completely burning down in front of you like a flaming dumpster fire. We need to look over here at this old discussion that is going to keep people circling around over and over and over forever because they're never going to find a conclusion. They're going to point at each other, just like always. When I pretty, in my opinion, is they're working either we're together and are now trying to blame whoever else, or they're still doing this together. And it's just about a big theater back and forth to not make you realize that there's far, far, far more important things to be looking at than the Wuhan lab. That's one piece in a multifaceted, massive agenda that scales all over the world, in particular in the United States, right? China's just as much a part of this and doesn't mean they're any less culpable or a problem, but who funded it? Who did the material come from? Who was the research coming from? It's all the U.S. government. And yes, Fauci's a part of that, but it's not just Fauci either. We need to be adults about this and not be pulled down into this two-party childish illusion that makes it about one specific thing. We got it all because Fauci did it. Gates did it, right? Yes, they're very much involved in this illusion, but it's much bigger than that. And I would say they're both playing very key roles. But bringing this over into the discussion of this, I want to talk about the idea of the emergency use authorization and how this is being abused. And my point really being is this is exactly the kind of conversation, even though I'm pointing at mainstream articles and FDA documents, they would censor this as vaccine hesitancy. Because it will. It absolutely will make you hesitant to take this thing. And it damn right well should. This is interesting, though. Here's just a quick point from 2018. And this is, you know, before COVID clown world started. No assurance about insurance under experimental drug law. Just a quick point. One showing you, first of all, the point was just a simple comment that was common knowledge. Medicare doesn't pay for experimental drugs. Yeah, you know, now that's fake news. You can't say that today because that's not true. Whatever, fake news. But what's interesting is the bill signing here. Or what this is about, really, is something that Trump started in 2018 or before. But in any case, the point was about giving you the right, especially, well, I guess in particular, if you are dying or very sickly, to try whatever you want. Which, by the way, seems like that seems like a very important thing for where we currently are, does it not? Well, I don't care what you say. I want to try remdesivir. I want to try hydroxychloroquine. And I have the right because this is still law. But ask yourself why that's not being allowed. What's interesting is go to the White House page to read it and what do you know? It's gone. Isn't that strange? I love how they're actively censoring things on the White House page, but let's go back and look at the actual actual bill, the Right to Try Act. So 2017. And this is just simply saying that if you're dying, you have the right to be like, I want to try that. I don't care if it's experimental. I don't care if no one's ever tried it before. I don't care if I just found it on the ground. I'm dying and I want to try whatever I can. Everybody understands that. I can't believe we're in a world where we pretend we have medical freedom, but you are not allowed to try what you want with your body when you're in a bad way and they don't have anything to give you. Like, this is ridiculous. It's it's all about liability and everything. It's crazy. But the point is, this is there. Here's the actions. This became public law on May 30th, 2018. There's no other action above it, as far as I can tell. Maybe I'm wrong. If somebody can show me something else, I looked. Doesn't seem like this has been changed or stopped or counteracted in some way. So if you have the right to try act, and there's plenty of people that have been sick or that have been struggling that are just simply saying, they're told you can't try this stuff. You're not allowed to have vitamin D. You're not allowed to have hydroxychloroquine, remdesivir, or ivermectin, or blah, 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 all the rest of the big pharma drugs. Why is that? Even though the law was passed and it's currently a law. Isn't that interesting? But going back to the point, experimental drugs. Right, this whole discussion about this idea about your insurance won't cover it, with all these things about life insurance, and it's all been fact checked and fake news. Right, not true. I'm not even really trying to get into that. I believe that there's all sorts of real world things happening where people are trying to file claims, and just like the insurance companies always do, they do everything they can to try to screw you. That's what they do. We all know that. They do everything they can to not pay you, which is just why I pretty much don't use them. But in the sense of insurance and COVID-19, I've heard examples of people saying that's not going to happen. So it could just be them playing their typical games, or it could be because they're saying, well, why would we insure something? Why would we insure you of something that's not even FDA approved? That makes perfect sense to anybody outside of clown world COVID. But bringing this forward into the FDA discussion, there's two things I want to show you. First, at the bottom here, this is on the most current version. Well, this one says May 10th, the other one says May 19th. They're both the most recent update of the two separate documents. There's two different ones. One is for caregivers, one is for the individual taking it, and so on. There's actually more than that, but here's what it says at the bottom. The emergency use, bottom line is 2021, May. The emergency use authorization for Pfizer, this is just for Pfizer, but it's the same logic for all the other ones. Let's just say the emergency use authorization for COVID-19 vaccines that have been emergency authorized are in effect for the duration of the COVID-19 emergency declaration. I've already shown you this, but it's just important to set that tone. So this is only allowed to be emergency authorized as opposed to being approved, which we'll show you again why that's very different and, in fact, clearly not safe in the way that they're talking about. But that it cannot continue if the emergency declaration for all of this is no longer there. That's what it's telling you. Okay, it's very interesting, right? Because I think we all pretty much are aware right now that we're not actually in an emergency, and we never really were based on the full breadth of the data. That if you're telling me that a child has 0.0002% death of infection fatality rate, according to the most recent study that it compiled 134 different studies about the infection fatality rate we just talked about yesterday, or that 25-year-olds have a 0.01% infection fatality rate, all valid, backed up by 134 different studies around infection fatality rates for COVID-19. So explain for me how that's an emergency. Then you talk about all the combinations of flu and pneumonia, influenza, which we're going to get into today, the PCR test and the false positives and on and on and on. And even then, we can see that everything's tapering off to a large degree. They're removing mask mandates, they're allowing kids to go back to school. So how are we still in an emergency? Because they need it to be. So you get the point, right? We're not really an emergency, but they're keeping it that way. Very telling. Oh, and the other part was just simply to reiterate the other important part, which is always still the case. There is no U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved vaccine to prevent COVID. Not just this one, but none. There is zero FDA approved injections. Zero. As of right now. So going forward, let's look at this. Unapproved drugs, according to the FDA. This is their website. So this is what all these are, right? We're clear on that. This is an unapproved vaccine, okay? So what is an unapproved vaccine? Or just unapproved anything, okay? Unapproved prescription drugs pose significant risks to patients because they have not been reviewed by the FDA for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Let me just read that again. Unapproved prescription drugs, including vaccinations, pose significant risks to patients because they have not been reviewed by FDA for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Now, yes, we're arguing that the emergency use authorization is applied because of the safety that's been claimed by who? Oh, cool, by Pfizer, by Johnson & Johnson, by AstraZeneca, by Moderna. Companies with profit motives. Oh, and Pfizer, you know, the habitual offender, according to science, according to multiple discussions. The fact that the Pfizer tracker shows you that they've spent over $4 billion for lying about safety, lying about side effects of drugs, lying about all sorts of things. literally been called a habitual offender. But yet here they are, and we're trusting their claims about safety and their review. Not the FDA, because it has not been approved. Without FDA review, it says, there is no way to know if these drugs are safe and effective for their intended use. Oh, well, isn't that telling? I wonder how they can just say something different on the news, right? Because look, this is from 2021. This is not old. This is very clear. And even if it was, it doesn't take, like, we just alter definitions like they do everywhere else because they want you to think differently and people will just go along with that. There is no way to know if these are safe because they have not been reviewed by the FDA. Whether they are manufactured in a way that ensures consistent drug quality or whether their label is complete or accurate. They can't confirm any of those things. That's what it's saying. You can't confirm safety efficacy. They can't confirm whether they've been magnified. Like, that's the point they just said. The person that I just read the study yesterday, they don't even understand how the mechanism works in regard to how the vaccine produces this because it's not included in their data. The CDC, the FDA, they know this. They know the inserts for these things are blank. This is all a big game that they're pretending they don't know or they're pretending is somehow acceptable, and people that just trust authority are taking it. Then it says unapproved drugs have already resulted in patient harm, and the agency works to protect patients from risks posed by these drugs. Right, that's including COVID-19 injections that are emergency authorized, period. Isn't that interesting? Well, here's another interesting part. FDA approval is required by law. We know that, but unless there's an emergency, right? Which we already, I think, made clear is really not happening. But even if you think that, understand that that is the only reason they're allowed to drive this through is because of the emergency. FDA permits some unapproved prescription drugs to be marketed if the drug is subject to an open drug efficacy study implementation program. Not happening. All right, so one down, not happening. This is the drug efficacy. This is the administrative process to consider the effectiveness of drugs that have been approved for safety. Has not been approved, hence it has not gone through this process. Now they can argue that it's gone through trials in different ways, but it's not. They're just recreating and reimagining, like everything else, how this stuff goes in COVID clown world, which will then probably apply with the next thing that happens. Another emergency authorized thing that will just, I'm beginning to wonder whether everything going forward is just simply going to be emergency authorized forever. That you're always in an emergency, just like 9/11. We always have been. Well, we're going to go into the next parts, which show you that we already sort of were because of the opioid crisis and plenty of other things where they just had this ongoing kind of continued state of emergency. Well, it says healthcare professionals rely on the drug to treat serious medical conditions when there is no FDA approved drug to treat the condition. Aha. So there's two things there. They rely on it. Okay. So when we emergency authorize this thing, how would you know you would rely on it until it was actually implemented, right? Even trials are really just, you know, they're real, but they're what's the word for it? Not hypothetical, but they don't really fully see it. That's why they keep telling you, well, we're going to find out more as people continue to use this. You don't know we're relying on this thing until it's used. So I find that to be sort of ridiculous to pretend that we're relying on it, and that's why we're emergency authorizing it, because we are relying on it, but we're not, though, because it's not even being used yet. You see, that's not how this normally goes. This is for things like, you know, like a vitamin D scenario, where they're using it, but it pops up in a sort of an out-of-context use, and they go, well, we need this right now, and so we're already using it in a lot of ways. Let's just emergency authorize it for this exact use. That's how that normally goes. Not let's create something new, a new technology, and pretend like that's the only thing that will save us, and we're going to emergency authorize this based on a fake emergency, when there's plenty of other things that could be used with clear track records and efficacy history, including vitamin D. It says there is sufficient supply of an FDA-approved drug. Insufficient, excuse me. Again, there's plenty of other things that are in fact approved, that there's plenty of supply for, that have been shown to have incredibly strong effectiveness against exactly what we're talking about today. Doctors have been screaming about this from all sorts of different ones, not even just one specific drug. And they just ignore it, and they call it fake news, and they censor it, just like everything else that they think is creating vaccine hesitancy. You see where this is going? So this truth, the reality that this is something like, well, let's just pick any one of them. And trust me, I'm not advocating for any of these things, because I don't believe in big pharma anything, but ivermectin or whatever else. We can see that it absolutely has an effect. People are talking about it. or at the very least, let's put it this way, that people are reporting that it has an effect. So that in and of itself, in the minds of Facebook, creates vaccine hesitancy because, well, if I don't need a vaccine, I'm going to take this instead. That will keep me safe. Uh-oh. Even if it's true, we can't let them take that thing because that stops them from getting the vaccine. You see where this goes? This is all about the injection. I've been saying this from the very beginning. They're desperate. They are lying and hiding the facts so you then take this thing. That's sinister to me. So we can very clearly see, first of all, that this is, that this by definition is not safe, and understand that the definition of safe is that it can cause damage, or then the idea that danger is just simply able to cause harm. So it's all of these are by definition dangerous and unsafe. I was just talking about this Tim today, in fact, Tim on Tim Truth interview. So, and it says it right there, unapproved drugs pose significant risks, period. And we also see that they don't meet any of these things, but they're doing it anyway. Now here is the emergency use authorization on the Wayback Machine from 5/10/2019. Here's what it said first. Now I highlighted the differences on the new one, the new updated one. And there's some interesting standouts. So let's start here. The Emergency Use Authorization Authority allows the FDA to strengthen the nation's public health protections against, chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear defense, which, by the way, very clearly includes things like disease, right? So that's why it wasn't listed as a secondary thing. That's biological. But it says threats by facilitating the availability of use of I looked these all up earlier and I'm forgetting now. MCM was medical something. I'm not going to look it up again. But the point is the use of things like these vaccines needed during public health emergencies. Now, here's what it says now. Emergency use authorization authority allows the FDA to help strengthen the nation's public health protections against chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear threats, including infectious diseases. Okay. That's always telling to me. Can we all agree that infectious disease clearly falls under the category of biological? Yes, it does. So why did they decide to just force in that one? Let's make sure we're all clear that infectious diseases are part of that, because that's not very telling of their agenda that they're using this specifically for vaccines. And I mean, very telling. Oh, right here. Medical countermeasures. That's what it was right there. So going to the next part. Under Section 564, the FDA commissioner may allow unapproved medical products or unapproved uses of approved medical products, which is really what it's about, to be used in an emergency. That's the important part. In an emergency, to diagnose, treat, or prevent serious life-threatening diseases caused by the different threats when there are no adequate approved or available alternatives. That's always the important part. And that's why they've gamed this from the beginning to make sure that there were not even any discernible things that could be pointed to as that. Any of them. Despite there being this weird back and forth between like hydroxychloroquine, no, it's remdesivir or whatever it was. There's ivermectin back and forth. And then all of a sudden, none of them are okay. It's like, that's strange. There's plenty of efficacy data. No, you're all fake news, right? Well, here's what it says now. Oop, wrong one. It's interestingly adds, and this is one of the things that have changed. Well, it says that under this section of the FDA Cosmic Act, and when the Secretary of HHS declares that an emergency use authorization is appropriate, you see, so this was added into it. So they're adding on the idea of the emergency use authorization, like it's a normal thing. That just when they decide to do that, and no, that's not normally, or I meant the HHS part here. This is the idea that the HHS has been added to this. And this is the part, Whitney and I have talked about this quite a bit. The Health and Human Services addition to this, before it was just the FDA. Now you've got the Health and Human Services essentially controlling what the FDA's job would have been, which is Food and Drug Administration and making sure they're safe, even though that's not what they do anymore because they're a captured agency by outside private entities' interest, which is exactly the point. But I find it telling that they include the HHS in there, as well as the fact that they're including and putting in our emergency use authorization is appropriate in there, which is the first thing I was saying. But it says when certain criteria are met, including there are no adequate approved or available alternatives. So they added when certain criteria are met. It's just very interesting how they've changed these things over the process of less than a year, or I guess a year or more. When there are no alternatives, that's all it says. But now it adds when certain criteria are met. So it's not just that there's no alternatives, you see, because that eventually would be able to point back to and go, well, clearly there were alternatives. But now it's like, well, no alternatives, but when certain criteria are met. which is up for them to decide. So there's their loophole for that exact point. And they've added that after the fact during COVID-19 because they know that's an issue. Very telling. That's my opinion, but it's very, very telling. Now there's nothing else beneath that. Now look at all this addition. Now it says, please note, and this is actually really interesting, a determination under Section 319 of the Public Health Service Act that a public health emergency exists, such as the one issued on January 31st, 2020, does not enable FDA to issue emergency use authorizations. That's weird, isn't it? It's a very clear statement. Please note. And I'm actually not even sure how to take that. What are they saying right there? I'm sure there's like another way that this goes around it, but they're simply stating that this act does not, or the declaration of the emergency does not simply give them the ability to enable these things. So what does? I believe it's now the HHS. That's the point. They've moved this away, and it's this is, if the FDA's job was to keep this safe, we created another group that seemingly is completely compromised, in my opinion, going back to the anthrax and false flag and everything else. In any case, it just shows you how this is being moved in an interesting way. But it says subsequent HHS declarations supporting the use of emergency use authorizations and based on this determination are described in the blue boxes below. And just goes on to point out the different acts and how it's used and abused. But this is interesting down here. There's a lot of stuff that people probably don't know about. These are all issued emergency use authorization drugs. Now, first note that there's two. This is Johnson & Johnson. This is Moderna. This is Pfizer. Okay. This is December 11th, 2020. December 18th, 2020. December 27th, 2021. So in 2020, these were all being given emergency authorization, despite the fact that you could argue very clearly that we were not in a state of emergency. You could argue that there was plenty of other things that could have been used, and yet they were granted anyway. But that's not the main point here. What does that say? Subsequently used by the FDA are listed below. Oh, I think I was just giving that from me earlier. But here's the point. Look at all these things that are also emergency authorized. Did you know about any of these? These are all drugs that are authorized in an emergency use, all the way dating all the way back to 4/30/2020, April 30th, 2020. They're already emergency authorizing something. Like, can you not argue very clearly that at April 30th, 2020, that there was plenty of factors that might not have applied? Like, can you argue that we needed this? We needed to rely on this for use, and there was literally nothing else that could be used? This is continuous renal replacement therapy specifically for COVID-19. So we're already emergency authorizing things that we have alternatives for. I mean, this is crazy. There's something happening around all this, and it's all being emergency authorized. There doesn't seem to be any process aiming for approval, and it's all under the guise of COVID-19 and an emergency. May 1st, COVID-19, licensed by healthcare providers to treatment of suspected laboratory-confirmed COVID-19. So here's something else that's just for treating COVID-19 in children. So why then, if this was already emergency authorized, did they then emergency authorize a vaccine? Clearly, they already have something that's being used, right? You see how this continues to compile. You just don't continue to emergency authorize, because that at some point, really early on, becomes contradictory to the point of emergency authorization. You already have something that's being used, so you don't need to rely on the other thing, but you just continue to emergency authorize these things. Here's 5-8, another drug of some kind. This is for maintain sedation of children 16 or older than 16, right? I mean, it's understand, first of all, too, this kid's basically zero risk and they're doing these things anyway. But on and on and on. I mean, look, it just goes on, and there's all these have been emergency authorized. And I don't think Americans are aware of what's happening. And all these things are being used under the guise that they're safe, and they haven't even been approved by the very group that's supposed to check that they're safe. It's just unbelievable to me. But bringing this over into the point of the manipulation, I think this was... I just wanted to have this up just to reiterate the fact, because this actually says it much clearer. An emergency use authorization is a mechanism to facilitate the availability and the use of medical countermeasures, including these injections, including vaccines, it says right there, during public health emergencies, right? That's very clear. So they have to declare a public health emergency to be able to do this. And that's why it's just gangbusters now on just declaring everything emergency use. Here is the first declaration of emergency use, or of a public health emergency, which, by the way, was what started their ability to do all of this, which, by the way, started with Trump's administration. So if Alex Azar had not been directed to declare this public health emergency, at the very least, it wouldn't have even started until Biden declared it. Right. So let's see that very clear continuity here where we are continuing through. This is January 27, 2020, using, as we pointed out, 319 of the Public Health Service Act. Right. So this is a declaration of emergency that started everything and it all went downhill from there. Here is a renewal of that declaration on Biden's administration. This is April 15, 2021. Now, what's interesting here is you'll find, I'm going to show you next, that this has been something they've been doing quietly every 90 days. Renewing the claim that this is an emergency, despite having, you know, look, at some level, they had to prove this or really just declare it. I mean, we won't pretend like they have any checks and balances anymore, but we are supposed to be like, well, we're not. This is supposed to be government acting upon direction from their constituency, but not in a public emergency. They're dictators in a public emergency. So Xavier Becerra, how you pronounce his name, the current HHS manipulator, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is now again reiterating this. And he also points out that he previously renewed on April 21st, 2020, July 23rd, 2020, October 2nd, 2020, January 7th, 2021. But here it is, just more specific. Or technically this was, why did I have this one? Is it the same thing? Yeah, I think I was grabbing something from it. Oh, wait, no, it looks different. Oh, I see. So this is just the earlier one. This is the date's right there. April 7th, which is interesting. April 7th, April 15th. In any case, let's just go to this point where here is something very important to understand. Public Health Service Act, Section 319, Public Health Emergencies. A lot of good stuff in here that you should understand. How the law works and how they're manipulating it in a lot of different ways, but just in the interest of time, the most important part, duration. The Section 319 determination remains in effect for 90 days or until the secretary determines the emergencies no longer exist, whichever occurs first. If the same or additional conditions continue to warrant a public health emergency, the secretary may renew the determination for additional 90-day periods. You see what that says? If the same or additional conditions continue to warrant that. So it has to remain the same. You can't just point back to why COVID was dangerous and, well, we are in a different situation now, but it could come back. That's not how that works, but that's what they're using today. The same conditions or additional. So it needs to be worse than it was or just as bad to maintain this claim of public health emergency. We all know we're not there. If they're pulling back mask mandates, if they're changing everything with no justification, at the very least, that shows you that they don't think we're in this situation anymore. Not the same way it was before, at the very least, which then makes this no longer allowed to be renewed. Understand that very clear. This is being abused. Just like with the Patriot Act, just like everything else, they will continue to kick it down the road. And this is what you need to watch out for. At some point over the next however period of time, day, week, month, year, they're going to try to enshrine this as a constant, like they've done with everything else, where they're going to say, let's just pass a legislation. You know, it'll be like the public, you know, this is what it'll be. It'll be your Medical Freedom Act, which is always how they name these things, the counter of what it should be. And what it will do is simply solidify that they don't need to do every 90 days. It's just going to be that we're always in a constant state of emergency or danger. And so we'll keep it at this level. Or something like that. And this is what happens in history that we've seen over and over and over. But to the point, we are not in the same or worse condition than we were before. So they are not allowed to do what they keep doing, which is continue to reset the emergency. This is the last one they did, April 15, 2021. But if you go down, you'll see the different times. April, October 2nd, January 7th. Okay, wait a minute now. October 7th, what's 90 days? Right? October, November, December, October to November, November, December, December to January. Okay, so October 2nd to January 2nd is when that was expired. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. You guys love that. If you're telling me that this expired on January 2nd, meaning we were no longer in an emergency on January 2nd to January 6th, let's say, that means that every single injection that was given between January 2nd, 2021 and January 7th, 2021 was a crime. That means that every single thing they did under the claim of that emergency, which had lapsed, which was no longer valid, was a crime. But they just did that. We'll just do it on 7 days later. Same thing they've done in the past with other things that are supposed to lapse, and they just kind of not care about it until nobody... That is a big deal. There was basically a five-day period where everything they did was a crime, and you weren't in an emergency, and yet they were still mandating things, still putting you on lockdown, still doing everything they said that they were allowed to do because of the state of emergency that was currently not existing. And that happens more than once, by the way. You can go all the way through the timeline and see that there's periodically 3, 4, 5 days in between. Sometimes they do it a couple days ahead of time, which shows you they're aware of this. But isn't that incredible? Renewal of the determination that a public health emergency exists as the result of continued consequences of coronavirus disease. Clearly, that's not the case. Very, very clearly, according to all their information. But the other point that you might have noticed is that the opioid crisis is something that's always been there. It goes all the way down here. It started on October 26, 2017. Determination that a public health emergency exists. Now, you understand here, guys, it's still a public health emergency. It doesn't just stop being a public health emergency because it's about opioids or because it's about a disease or because it's about whatever else they name it. So this alarmed me to realize that not only have they declared this a public health emergency back in 2017, but that they just continued doing it over and over and over and over every 90 days. And by the way, you'll still find that there's a huge gap between some of these things, which shows you that they lapsed on that too and broke the law and didn't care. But it goes all the way till today. The last one they did was just on April 7th, 2021. Did you know about that? I didn't know about that. Well, they're continuing that. So now they have two of them. Now they've got a secondary public health emergency that they can keep going just in case this other one gets pushed away. Let's not pretend for one second that this is not planned and organized at some level, because there's no reason to pretend that the opioid crisis is a public health emergency. Now, I'm not saying it's not one of the most damaging things we've ever seen done by our government or allowed, but this is something that has been created by our government and by the lacking reporting of our mainstream media and by the nefarious agendas of the companies that were allowed to do this, such as Pfizer or different companies involved in these things, or specifically such as blanking on that main one that just they had to pay $1 billion or whatever. That's a slap on the wrist for these people. You guys remember the main group that's involved with specifically the main opioid issue. But how is that a public emergency, especially when they've been doing this since 2017 and it's only continued to get worse? It's only a public emergency by name so they can justify things that they don't want you to see. So they can do things like emergency authorized drugs way back before this started without any real justification. Because you know what? We're in a public emergency. We're right now, Americans are on like a rapid education of finding out how our government has been abusing our health and everything else just like this for as long as we can remember. And we're only beginning to see it right now. It's amazing. I think what they've inadvertently done has opened the people's eyes to what they really are, going back long before COVID. And they're scared. But it's a public health emergency in multiple ways, right? So how in the world, as I love to point out, can the UK point out under their high consequence infectious disease document back all the way back on March 19th, 2020. And understand, this document is updated as of May 12th, 2021. Okay, so this is not some old thing. The UK, as of May 12th, 2021, and as they made sure it was clear all the way back in March 19th, 2020, they still claim COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease in the UK. Anybody explain that for me? How they can still be arresting people and locking them in their homes when they're telling you it's not considered to be a high consequence infectious disease? It's because we're being manipulated. Can't be a state of emergency if it's not a high consequence infectious disease. This is a clear, I guess you could argue it's not true, but at the end of the day, we can clearly see that this is not what we're being told. Here's another example of how they're continuing to push these things, even though they're still finding new things. They're still testing and researching. That's the point. This is an experiment and it's not approved. So they're continuing to do these things. Here's what it says. And I do have the actual document next, but it says, going back to this, Pretty sure that this is something that should have been known from the start. Here's the document. It says, up until now, Pfizer vaccine had to be administered within 5 days of it being removed from the ultra-low temperature freezers. But now we moved it to 31 days. Why? Because we found more information. It says, yet another example of how they're still currently testing and evaluating this experimental injection, even as it's coercively administered. This is what would have been found during normal testing and research, that which was rushed, skipped, and entirely ignored for your safety. Because that makes sense. As he says, why is this emergency authorization to administer non-FDA approved vaccines still in effect if the emergency is over? Exactly. At what point do we halt the emergency authorization rather than seeking? And that's not the point is, again, we don't do that. It's just over. When the emergency ends, it's over immediately. That's why they're not allowing this to end. Are we starting to catch on? Now, here is that document from the UK government. It says, a change approved following detailed review of additional stability data. Okay, so they reviewed the data. So you're telling me that they didn't have time to detail review the data of how long this was safe before they gave it to everybody? I guess they just were catching up on extra research, right? No, they didn't do this. Now they're doing it while it's being administered. What if they came to find out that it was only safe 2 days afterward? Well, they were getting people sick with all the 3 days afterward stuff, right? This is crazy not to see how obviously dangerous this is. New storage conditions for Pfizer that extend the length of time thawed vaccines can be stored at normal fridge temperatures, 5 to 31 days, have today been approved by the MHRA. The change was approved following their detailed review of additional stability data submitted to the regulator by Pfizer. Okay, so where is that coming from? Pfizer's continued research on this because they're still doing trials until 2023. That's safety too. That's what this is. This is safety and efficacy research. Guys, it's so obvious how clearly they're pretending this is done as they do it constantly in front of us. Oh, now we're researching anaphylactic shock. Now we're researching heart problems. It's all just because, right? This is constant, which brings us to the next point. 18 cases of heart problems in young adults after COVID vaccine, according to NBC in Connecticut. 18 more cases of heart problems, but it's only rare, and it's rare here, and it's rare there, and it's rare over there, and it's rare this one too, and they're all rare. They're all rare. This 30 cases here is rare, and that 40 cases over there is rare. This different problem is really rare here, right? How many rare cases before it becomes obviously not rare, even if they're all different issues? I don't believe any of these are rare in the sense they're trying to claim them, like percentage-wise. You know, it depends on what you think would be rare. But in the context of why this would be dangerous for someone with 0% risk, it's all too much. 18 cases of heart problems in people that have basically zero risk, depending on where they are in the teen. Like, understand that, as I just pointed out, that study, I'm not going to try to bring it up right now. I just talked about it yesterday. Combining 134 studies about infection fatality rate found that even 25-year-olds were at 0.01% risk. 0.01 at 25 years old. They claim it goes up quite quickly once you get in over 50, but the point is that the vast majority of people are not at any risk, and they're still forcing this thing on that we're every day finding new problems with. And they're forcing it all of them, tricking children with ice cream and donuts and saying, come on and get this, even though you don't need it. James makes a great point here. So while governments consider a COVID vaccine for children they don't need, perhaps they should also consider this. 570 million children don't have access to clean drinking water, and diarrhea caused by dirty water kills a child under 5 every 2 minutes. But good thing Gates is over there pumping them full of vaccines, because that'll help them, right? I just talked about this with Tim today. The reality that if they really wanted to help these people, give them some of the money you don't need. Give them water, food, instead of giving them GMOs that actually decrease their food supply over years that we can prove today, or all sorts of other things. They're playing God and manipulating, experimenting on people that they think are less than them. Very clear. Let's worry about the children that have zero risk from COVID as people radically scream about how much danger we're in. And James makes the clear point. 570 million children don't have access to clean water right now. 5 every 2 minutes. But yeah, let's worry about what they're not at risk from. How much you want to bet they would be more concerned in the media about whether this child gets a COVID vaccine than whether or not he can have clean drinking water? Of course they would. They don't care about these children. They care about the vaccine. Going on to some other issues, West Lee mom had 12 anaphylactic shocks and put in coma after very rare COVID Pfizer jab reaction. Since having her second dose of Pfizer, Last month, Christy Hext was suffering a dozen anaphylactic shocks and been put in an induced coma. She also had a seizure and fractured her wrist, leg, and cheekbone after falling down the stairs. Now, this is an interesting point in regard to what we keep talking about. The FDA document makes it clear that they need to have appropriate medical equipment on hand for any possible adverse event, which includes all sorts of very serious things. It's a matter of fact that the drive-thrus don't have that, that Publix or Walgreens don't have that, that the bar or the Waffle House does not have that on hand. I think that's pretty clear. So they're all breaking the law. No one cares because vaccine good no matter what. This woman went home and fell down the stairs and possibly could have killed herself because of what these adverse events caused for her. Now, how many people do you think die in that situation and don't get attributed to the vaccine? How many people are driving home and get a car accident and die and don't get attributed to the vaccine? How many people anywhere in any situation are hurting themselves and we're not talking about it? I can almost promise you. Look, and we're not even getting into the severe stuff. People passing out has seemed pretty damn common, or at least having head issues or headaches or being unable to open their eyes or unable to hear. These are happening within moments after this, guys, and it's pretty damn common. And yet people are driving away after 10 minutes, 15 minutes from these driving places. It's alarming to me. So the incredible run of misfortune for the Westlake carer all started after her COVID jab when 20 minutes later, her lips and tongue started to swell, and she started gasping for breath. She went on to suffer further 9 anaphylactic shocks during her initial hospital stay, resulting in her being put into an induced coma and placed in intensive care. She was just, and she says, of course, because this is how brainwashed people are, that she was just unlucky. And her reaction is she still urges people to get the vaccine. It saves lives. Even her. Even as she almost dies, even as she falls down the stairs because they're not taking care of what's happening, they don't tell her what could be possible, and she has all sorts of shock and and is an induced coma. And yeah, but go get it anyway, though. What's this? This is the power of social engineering. Another sad story. Remember that big push about William Shakespeare, the first man in the world to get the vaccine? Well, he just died. 81 years old, had a stroke. Now, can 81-year-old people have strokes? Of course they can. But what's the most common thing we're seeing around this right now? Strokes, right? Thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, blood clots, all of it. I find it pretty interesting that the first man that they were hyping up as being somebody that was not, you know, like the idea this is not somebody that was going to just die off tomorrow based on the way they sold this story when it first started. But now, because he died, it's out. Well, of course he was going to die. He's 81. Yeah, of course, right? Which is ridiculous. In any case, I find it pretty telling that we continue to see this happen and nobody wants to pay attention. Here's the story. First man in the world to get approved for COVID jab is dead. Illness unrelated to the virus, of course. Getting the American-made Pfizer COVID vaccine, died in the hospital age 81 after suffering a stroke. Now, it basically goes on to say that he had been suffering for a while before this. So, could it have been that? Sure, it could have been. There's no reason to exclude that, but that's what's happening. Here's another one that they'll exclude and ignore, even though this is a very obvious one. Model Stephanie Dubois, I believe, reveals she felt horrendous and showed bruised arm in her last post before dying after taking the COVID injection. Now, they're very careful to say it that way because that's accurate. They're not claiming that it 100% was caused by that. I would say it seems most obvious to me, but saying it happened after this injection is completely valid, but this would be vaccine hesitancy. They would delete this. They would censor it. They would downgrade it in comments. They would remove it entirely because it creates hesitancy, even though you're accurately reporting it. So this is the point. Ms. Dubois, 39, suffered a serious thrombotic episode because that's not totally connected to these injections, right? And of course, as they say, a quote, very rare blood clot after being given specifically the AstraZeneca one. Shocking. Even though, by the way, the data shows that the Pfizer and Moderna ones are far more problematic. They're just not really showing you that. And in fact, gaming the way that they pump out the Bayer's information in certain areas. But this was her arm. She shared this online and was saying this, I'm right here, saying, done being ill now, couple more tests today. I don't like needles, feeling tired, like clearly was of the mind. This thing was safe and effective because the media told her so. Went and got it, not concerned. It's all good because it's all going to be okay. 12 days later, she shared what would be her final post, a picture of her bruised arm. And that's what she wrote that. And she died. Cyprus Health Service spokesman said that her death would be investigated, of course, by the European Medicines Agency until such time as they say it can't be confirmed, they forget it forever. But, of course, it has not been confirmed that it's linked to the jab. Of course not. That's what they'll say forever. My guess is they don't care whether you know this person, whether she was your daughter. You'll never find out. They'll never come back with a full answer because that's what always happens. Where are all the other ones? Right? I mean, there was ones that happened right away that they claim they're investigating. Weren't they investigating all of these? That's what they claim. Where's all the data? Where's the investigations for the people that we now know died from blood clots? Do they have that information? Why aren't they showing us? Because they're not doing it, guys. They're not investigating these things because they don't have the resources to do it. It's a no-brainer. Dubois posted her Facebook post after she received the first dose. Quote, "So I had the vaccination today. I hate needles. Today was no exception. And now I feel horrendous. Pizza in bed for me." Very sad. May 14th, she was taken to the hospital with breathing problems. She wrote, quote, "Woke up feeling fine, and then within an hour, I felt full body shakes. All my joints seized, and I was struggling to breathe and could not, and was cold to the bone with persistent headaches and dizziness." So, you know, this could be any number of things, including just their body reacting horrendously to whatever this concoction is, but also potentially blood clots that caused this. "Mom and Dad took to look after me and took me for a COVID." So you're dealing, you get an experimental injection that you probably don't know is such, and that's because the media lied to you, even though they're obligated according to the FDA to inform you that it's unapproved and experimental. But, and when you start having what everyone tells you is happening, or if you're paying attention to anyone outside the mainstream media, even the mainstream media is talking about blood clots, instead of going, "Wait a minute, maybe this is something in my body that you just put in there, let's go to the hospital," you go and get a COVID test, which is only going to exacerbate your problems. Sickening to me. And then, of course, because they didn't go to the hospital on May 19th, she slipped into a coma. Now, I'm not blaming the parents. The parents are abused by the government like everybody else. And here, of course, head of the pharmaceutical services says, "We may never be sure that it's linked to AstraZeneca's vaccine. We may never know." Of course you know, because it's almost impossible to prove that. And you'll always lean into that. "We don't know for sure, so that means no." No, it doesn't, but that's what they'll say. Nobel Prize winner Professor Luc Montagnier claims that vaccination responsible for Corona's new variants. Now, here is an exact example of somebody who's not a fake news anti-science conspiracy theorist, but in fact, one of the most recognizable experts, a Nobel laureate, who is telling you, in his opinion, now he could be wrong, in his opinion, that these injections are in fact creating the problem. And of course, they just ignore it because they can't call this guy an anti-science fake news conspiracy theorist as much as they have subtly tried to do that. Professor Luc Montagnier said that epidemiologists are aware of the facts related to the injection, but they're silent anyway. And we've heard that so many times so far where doctors have quietly admitted to their friends and their coworkers that, well, you know, yeah, we see it too, but we can't say anything because we'll be fired. Yet we still go forward pretending like that's not the truth. And it says, in response to a question, the Nobel laureate professor said that vaccines do not stop the virus. Rather, they work the opposite way, making the virus powerful. What they're claiming is that this is actually creating new variants. It does not sound like a perfect, that sounds like it would work perfectly for the agenda, doesn't it? Here's the tweet where he says it himself, and you can watch it yourself. It's incredibly obvious, and he's been speaking up from the very beginning. He said that they know about this. Oops. Specifically in regard to antibody-dependent enhancement. What do you know? Going forward, Houston doctors searching for a link between COVID patients and somebody who developed large tongues? Not a joke. This is disgusting. This is not a joke, guys. That's his tongue. Okay? Now, what's happening here, excuse me, is that there's something strange happening. Around in the context of COVID clown world. Now, instead of going, what about this very weird genetic altering manipulation thing we're experimenting with people, right? And we're injecting in people's bodies and finding all these weird things that are being reported. Instead of looking at that, we're just going to go, well, it might be COVID. And we're going to do our due, we're going to use our confirmation bias to search for something that will give us any indication it might be linked to COVID-19. You know what they're going to probably find? Something that gives them that indication, even though it's not even there. Right. If you seek out what you want to find, you're probably going to find it instead of just going, how about we research this with an open mind? Could it be anything? Could it be where he was eating dinner last night? Could it be shellfish? Could it be the injection? But no, they're currently searching for one thing, the link to COVID-19, because that's all that can be discussed. If you go any other direction, you'll be fired and called a fake news idiot. That's the world we live in today. But this is alarming. It says, 9 patients have apparently been intubated in the hospital, with 8 of them being African-American. 2 of the patients had strokes before developing what this is called, macroglossia. They had strokes, did they? Well, interesting how these people aren't sick with COVID-19, and interesting how you could argue that they could have gotten the injection. Of course, they will leave that out of the discussion of the article, of course. But seeing as how, at this point now, they keep screaming that almost 40% have got at least one of them, well, you got a coin flip. That guy got one too. Look at that. And it says, and the remaining 7 had been, oh, excuse me, I take that back. I was talking about the vaccine. The remaining 7, so 2 of them had gotten it. But here's the interesting part. The remaining 7 have been hospitalized with COVID-19, but they were, this is the report. Now, I asked the same question. Were they hospitalized with COVID-19? Were they hospitalized with something else with a PCR test? Or were they hospitalized after getting the injection and they still call it COVID-19? All these things are valid because we all see it happening. It's been verified, every one of these things. So the point is, going forward, we don't know. At the very least, just because they had it and then this later happens means nothing but correlation. And in one case, or some of them. So you got some that don't. Like, the point is, you've got people that haven't had COVID-19 that have this happen to them. So how can you then try to make a link to COVID-19? Unless we're arguing something is spreading around, like the spike protein discussion, but that's different. But in any case, they're bending over backwards to try to associate it with COVID-19. It says the direct link between the virus and disease remains a mystery. Okay, then why are you even writing this article? If you've already done the research and you can't find a connection, why is the article saying we're trying to find a connection? Because that's all they're doing. We're not trying to research and help this guy. We're going to let this guy suffer with this grotesque tongue until we find a link to COVID. And then we turn around and go, you got COVID. That's it. Sorry. Here's a vaccine. Modern, you know, a miracle of modern medicine in the Western world, right? God, it's disgusting. But it says, but inflammatory cells detected on the patient's tongues proves there's something about the virus that makes some people more susceptible to this rare disease. What a scientific statement. So inflammatory cells detected on the patient's tongue. Like, we could probably list off about 100 different things that could cause that, including the injection that's causing inflammation all over your body anyway. Let's not talk about that, though. But just because there's some on the spot that is inflamed, that proves that there's something about this virus that makes people more susceptible to this. What? How in the world does that prove anything other than they've got inflammatory cells in their tongue that could be related? But see, this is how they're just making it about COVID, or that this thing could make COVID worse. How they're just gaming it into the narrative. Dr. Melville, who believes the condition, quote, has a lot to do with where the virus is attached itself to the body's immune response to it. Now we're even getting into the immune response, and we still can't talk about the vaccine and how that could be possible. Just very strange to me. This to me looks like some kind of very weird inflammation or I mean, this is a strange thing that I've never even seen before outside of like elephantitis that all of a sudden pops up and we start using a new genetic alteration concoction in all sorts of people's bodies that we've never really tested properly. But let's all pretend like that can't be it. Fully vaccinated people will still need to self-isolate until June 21st. Right now, this is on metro.co.uk. I'll refresh it so you can see it when we're done, but they had it blocked behind something. And I just used this thing. Sometimes I can use this simplified article reader to kind of circumvent their blocks, even on New York Times and stuff. But here is what they're telling you in the UK, right? So the other point about this is, not only are all these negative side effects and all clear reasons why this isn't even properly being used under the guidance of approval or emergency authorization, is that it doesn't even work in the way that they're telling you that it does, that people are continuing to spread it, continuing to catch it, and continuing to have to go by everything. You realize the main point here is that, yeah, we'll go back to normal. You just have to wear a mask maybe in different situations. Well, no, the UK is already pulling back on that and going, well, you know what? Sorry, all these fully vaccinated people will probably have to still isolate and still do this and still do everything. Exactly. Being fully vaccinated will not stop you from having to self-isolate. It says more than 22 million fully vaccinated Brits may still have to self-isolate for 10 days after coming in close contact with an infected person. May? What do you mean may? There's no may about it. The point is, if you come in contact with that person, is the may. They intentionally play that word in a weird way because they go on to tell you, if you come in contact with somebody else that they claim is infected, which means that could also be another vaccinated person because they go on to tell you that you can be infected with your vaccine. So it's just ongoing. It's everywhere. If you cross another person that they think might be, you are then isolated because of your app. You have to wear your mask, get social distance. Nothing changes. This is the same scenario. It says the plans could dash hopes, of course, for a return to normality next month as a single infection in an office could spark a mass quarantine of staff. It's, are they pretending there's zero things they're pointing to? They're currently everywhere. They're currently pretending there's all sorts of stuff happening. They're still reporting on new cases yesterday and blah, blah, blah. So it's not like they're waiting for the new thing. If somebody has it and they walk around somebody else, the app goes beep, you walk near that guy, you could be, this is still happening. This is simply giving you the maybe scenario. So when it happens, you feel like, oh, well, maybe it almost wasn't going to happen, right? They're telling you right now, you're not going back to normal, even though the normal is never even in the cards. It says it could also put people off going to crowded places due to the risk of having to self-isolate. Oh, well, another bonus. They're threatening this so people stop going out of their own accord. A subsequent negative test would also not be enough to end the quarantine. So not only are they telling you that lockdowns are going to carry on and everything's still a problem, but they're also telling you the tests don't work. And we know that. They only work when we want them to. When we want to err on the side of pretending there's all these cases because there's false positives. But when you get the test, we don't care what it says because we know they don't work. Look at what they're telling you. A subsequent negative test would not even be enough. They don't care because they know they don't work. It's just about the going through the process. If these tests work the way they say they do, why would a negative test prove that you don't need to quarantine? It's crazy stupid. It says government sources told the paper that the contact tracing system should be here to stay. Let me just say that again. Here to stay. The contact tracing system should be here to stay forever, as there is a risk of catching and spreading COVID even after both the injections. Not a secret. There's a risk of catching and spreading it, meaning they don't stop transmission, as they've all admitted to you if you just listen. Quote, there is still a risk of getting the virus and spreading it on. Now, all the people that want to ignore this are going to say, there's always a risk. There's always a small percentage. Well, that's not what this is actually talking about. When you realize what they're telling you and look at all the studies and the data directly from Pfizer, directly from Moderna, they'll tell you themselves, we don't know whether this stops transmission. And then you look at the real world evidence and you can clearly see that it doesn't. Thousands of breakthrough cases, hundreds immediately in Israel right after they got this. It's not happening the way they're telling you it is. The reality is this thing just doesn't spread that fast. It's 0.14% for the vast majority. Okay, so most people don't, and people probably think, well, I have the sniffles. I'm not sick because it doesn't actually affect them. So the point being is they're ignoring that stuff on the other side of this. So all they're pointing to is the severe ones. They already told you, we're only counting the hospitalizations and the deaths. So there's probably an exponential or an endless amount of people that are just dealing with this like the other side of it. The people that are dealing with it, but told they're going to die so they get a ventilator and kills them, right? It's not severe for the vast majority of people, according to their data. So you see how it's gamed on either side, how they pretend they use the cycle threshold to game it one side high and one and low on the other. They look at all cases, no matter what, even if it's not certified on one side, and they only look at hospital and deaths on the other. It's they're making sure that it's deceptive. But doesn't that, why wouldn't you argue that the cases through the vaccination would be more alarming? Obviously. But they don't care about that as much because this is a game. Residents should also be tested twice a week, according to the government. Well, good job. Get ready, UK. Now you're going to be tested twice a week and you're going to be on lockdown whenever they want. You live in an authoritarian government. We always have, but now they're showing it to you. The change to the guidance, which is not law, make sure you understand that. It's not law, appears to have been made on Friday without an official announcement. These are dictators, guys. It's not even law. They're just telling you, you have to do this. Do you believe for one second that because it's not law that they're not going to violently arrest you when you don't do it? Of course they will. They're off the rails. It says, I'm just gobsmacked. This is one of the other MPs. They're making such an important announcement and they don't even have the decency to tell us or tell our constituents. Right? Think about how crazy that is when you're creating a situation which removes everything they thought was going to happen and they don't even tell anybody. Quote, this is typical of the government's incompetence. Yeah, you're damn right. Unbelievable. Going forward, latest CDC data shows reports of adverse events. I just want to include this again, wrapping up the side effects. Remember that there is reported of 4,201 reported deaths following injection. 227,000 reports of adverse events following COVID injections. Now that's as of, as of 5/21. I guarantee it's higher now. But don't worry though, because all the people involved with this are making billions of dollars at your expense. Nine new vaccine billionaires amassed combined net worth of $19 billion during the pandemic. You know, while your family was struggling, while you didn't have a job, when they're making $19 billion. And don't forget that people like Bill Gates and everybody else, they wildly profited at your expense. Now, jumping over to this very strange discussion. Now, I'm contemplating right now. I know if I ask you guys, you're going to tell me to keep going. I'm finishing this. I'm contemplating kind of wrapping it right here, but I'm thinking we will talk about this. We'll go forward a little bit. Now, this is about vaccine passports and manipulation. This is about the coercion of both adults and children. And what this is going, this is speaking to that point that they don't care what you think. You don't have the right in COVID clown world to think that you don't want this, to think that it's not necessarily tested, to think that you know what? I don't trust these people. I'm not going to get it no matter what. You don't have that right. And so what they're doing, this article is about how you manipulate people to get it. Of course, all under this premise that it's all under, you're doing the right thing, right? Doesn't matter how dishonest it is. Doesn't matter how manipulative it is. It's because COVID vaccine, right thing. And it's all good because no matter what, vaccine, right. So we are going to lie to you. We're going to manipulate you. We're going to, you know, coercively make you, force you into situations where you feel like you have to do things, all because we know vaccine good for everybody. Right? This is, it's childish. In any other context, this would be just, I mean, dishonest is a nice way to put this. Criminal in other contexts. Five behavioral science hacks to convince the unwilling to get vaccinated. It's the unwilling. So not people that are on the fence, but people that don't want it. So if you've decided per your medical freedom that you don't want this thing, they're not okay with that. So here's five ways to trick them into doing it in the honest scenario of the, what do you even call this? Because if you try to use their terms is almost, you know, these people, the pro reality. I don't know. There's always weird terms. I'm just going to leave it alone. I don't like using these terms either side of it because they're always all encompassing. But last week it says 37% of Americans polled said they are not going to take this. That's only polled, by the way. It's sitting easily at more than 50% of this country. I think it's actually more closer to 60% have not been fully vaccinated and clearly are saying they don't want to. 60% of nurses have said no, and they're clearly acting like that's not happening. 37%. Okay. After all this time, is anyone confused that there's a possible vaccine they can take? Everyone knows that everywhere. It's in your face, everywhere you go, every social media, every commercial, everything you do is everywhere. Vaccine, get your vaccine, it's ready for your vaccine. Okay. So after all this time, if you haven't gotten it, I guess I just said the same thing, but the point is that they're telling you that you're wrong. That's a problem, they say. It's a problem that you have free choice and have decided not to do it. If more than one in three people didn't take it, it would not only make everyone less safe. Now explain for me how that even makes sense. See, that makes sense. That's when they expose to you that they know that this thing doesn't work. Like if you're, what you're saying is it doesn't stop transmission. And what you want is for essentially everyone to take this experimental thing, which doesn't stop the transmission, but they claim lessens the symptoms. So we essentially all get sick. Right? And yet that continues to increase risks because they're talking about long haul and all these different things. So how does that make sense? If this thing does work on the other side of the argument that they say it does, well, then you're safe if you get it, right? So why does it matter if we don't? What they'll then argue then is, well, what about the vulnerable, the ones that can't get it? Well, that's not the same argument. Everyone is not less safe by me not taking this thing, right? They just move the goalpost in every data point. But it says, but it would significantly delay the reopening. It says it would not make everyone less safe, which I'm just surprised to see. I read this earlier, but I've read that really quickly just now. As you know, as we've read 1,000 times on the show, most of these arguments today are that either everyone's safe or no one's safe. We've all seen that. Just to make that point, regardless of what it says in this article. But just to be clear, I read that wrong. Would not make everyone less safe, but it would significantly delay the reopening of elements of the economy. Now, how is that? Again, why does that make sense? It really doesn't, based on their information. The economy shouldn't have been closed to begin with. But you see, now they're holding that hostage over you getting an injection. suffering would be extended and lives would be lost. Yeah, because the lockdowns would continue and that would be the government's fault. Period. But it says the aggressive but surefire way. Now, here's where it gets into what they need to do. According to reports, the U.S. approach will likely rely on a technology system that tracks people's doses along with a physical card for people to carry in their wallets. If implemented successfully, this system creates an opening to build incentives to participate in society. Right. Society that you were already existing in up until now. And then suddenly they just said, well, you can't now because you didn't do what we said. So now you don't get this, but it's okay though, because not everyone, like, they're trying to argue that, well, it's just incentives to participate, right? We're not going to force them, but we're going to make it so they can't shop or drive or think or act or talk or do anything, but it's all good because it's not forceful, right? Like, they know that's dumb. They know that that's wildly invasive and that's dangerous, but they don't care. And they're going to pretend like it's all his choice. As it says, if you want to do X, you need proof of vaccine. An open admission of exactly what we told you would happen, whether it's card, app, or vaccine passport. You'll need it to, and this is what Biden said, and what I told you is this transition from mask to needing proof was always the plan. And now they're writing it out. The most surefire path back to normal would be to require a vaccine pass to do adult activities, such as concerts, flights, and yes, even employment. So you can't even get a job without having this thing. But he says, but importantly, it's not a mandate though. No one is forcing anybody to get it, but it would require people to forego social benefits if they choose to. Social benefits? Do you realize how think about how authoritarian that is. Like, this just sounds like what you would hear in China, right? But the idea is what they're telling you is you can't have a job. You can't go out and do things. You can't have transport, but you know, we're not going to force anybody. Like, he must know how dumb he sounds when he says something like that. But it's all because the agenda is about the vaccine. We must see that by now. But here's what they're going to do. Schedule appointments for your friends. One easy hack is just to schedule it for them. Because that's not manipulative at all. So I've told you very clearly that in our friendship that I don't want this thing. And I think you're dumb for doing it. But you're going to secretly schedule an appointment for me and then just drop me off. Because that's going to work really well. And an effective way to get people to show up is to ask them to make a plan. Right? This is going to cause friendships to be broken, fights to happen. This is going to be dangerous. Include a lottery ticket. Great. Money talks. Include a lottery ticket that is paid out each week on vaccination cards. So now they're literally claiming we're going to like write out lottery on the vaccination cards. So that will incentivize us to like get vaccinated so we can maybe win money from a government that probably won't pay it out anyway. Like, they really think they think we're children. And it's just so apparent how wrong they are about most everybody. This type of reward substitution, getting us to do the right thing for the wrong reason, could help move the needle for the 37%, which is way more than that. Reward substitution, the right thing for the wrong reason. God, that's crazy, man. I mean, I just realized something. Hold on. There was something that I was going to show you guys. A video. It might not be relevant anymore, but it was on the side of one of these documents real quick. Maybe I missed it. Oh, well, there was a video. I'll remember to bring it back around. Oh, and by the way, I will not forget to play that clip today that I forgot to play on the other show. But going back to this, it might have been this, actually. I'll refresh in a second. We'll see. All right. Continuing on. Publicize your vaccine status, which we've all seen. Social norms are a powerful motivator. Experiments conducted in Iowa proved the threat of publishing the names of non-voters in the local newspaper drove higher turnout. So now they're suggesting, in a way that they think is, you know, subtle, but it's subtle as a hammer, let's expose everyone not getting injected. That's what they're suggesting. Imagine if you could see your Uber driver or babysitter was vaccinated, or if you could choose a restaurant based on whether their staff was vaccinated, right? They're creating the haves and the have-nots. Not based on science, but based on coercion. Choose words carefully. Some people react poorly when they're told what to do if they think it restricts their freedoms. Okay, so what you're implying there is it doesn't restrict their freedoms, even though you literally just said we're going to stop from driving, working, eating. I mean, like, this is so stupid. But they even say the formal word for this is called reactance. Research shows that one way to successfully counter reactants is to instead focus on the possible positive outcomes versus negative ones. You know what reactance stands for? or means is an unpleasant motivational arousal, a reaction to offers, persons, rules, or regulations that threaten to eliminate specific behavioral freedoms. I said it right that time. Right. So people reacting in a negative way to what is happening right now, people offering you things, giving you rules, manipulating things that very clearly undermine your freedom, is called reactance, that feeling you get. So it's not a fake thing. It's very real. And it says it occurs when a person feels that someone or something is taking away their choices or limiting their range of alternatives. It's literally what's happening. Reactance can occur when someone is heavily pressured to accept a certain view or attitude. People using reverse psychology are playing on reactance, attempting to influence someone to choose the opposite of what they request. Like we're 6 years old. But here they go, well, these people who think because they're really stupid that their freedoms are being restricted. Well, here's what you do. Play the game with them and you show them the negative, the positive, right? It's manipulative. Now understand what I'm talking about, what I've said before, sort of finding common ground with people and being like, and in fact, being dishonest and saying, well, you know, the vaccine's great. I think it's great and we should all get it. But here's a new study that seems to be, you know, interesting, don't you think? So they think you're on their side and they read the study, which they wouldn't have otherwise. Different, similar concept, but you understand what they're talking about here is patronizing in a way, which when the other side, I mean, you could make the same argument. I mean, it's the same concept, but the idea is what they're doing here is not embracing the actual information and simply just talking about narrative and saying that this is good. So here's how we need to influence them. What I'm talking about is scientific studies. Right? So I can manipulate into reading the facts, but if you read the facts, you're still reading the facts. What they're doing is saying, do this thing because we want you to, and we'll trick you into doing it. Add a deadline, a 30-day deadline with consequences such as having to wait in line, pay a small fine, or lose your spot altogether will drive uptake. Coercive, manipulative, and alarming. I think I was seeing if that video is the one I was talking about that was right there. Maybe not. I guess not. Maybe it changed the video. In any case, maybe it's on the next ones we're going to look at. But we're continuing to see this. Coercive, manipulative actions. Saudi Arabia. Right? Another example of why they're not the pious religious entities they pretend to be, which is something that's a whole other topic to get into, the fake Saudi everything, you know, anyway, I can get into the whole thing, but Saudi Arabia bars anti-vaxxers from pilgrimage and overseas travel in a bid to improve COVID vaccine uptake. So you're telling me that you're going to challenge people's pilgrimages, which is a sacred thing in any religion, really. I mean, I went on a Christian pilgrimage on the El Camino de Santiago from France across Spain a long time ago, right? It's a religious pilgrimage. The concept here is that for specifically Muslims in this case, it is a very, very important thing. And they're just going to go, well, screw you. You can't do it because you don't take this injection that probably challenges your religious beliefs anyway. Clearly, the monarchy cares about their religion. The same thing with the ISIS concept. These people are not the religious extremists that they try to make them out to be from the top down. They are creations of your governments that have been used over the years that have used that and then radicalized people that do believe it. But the point is, from the top down, if their government's going to do something like this, they don't care about this stuff. All they're doing is trying to coerce their people into taking this thing so they can do something that they think they'll do it, right? Even if they don't want it, they're going to go, well, I have to go on pilgrimage, so be it. Oregon is the first state to require vaccination proof for maskless entry into businesses. I just told you this would be the case. The transition from you have to wear a mask all the time to where you don't have to, but you have to prove you have a vaccine, an injection at every interaction and every transaction. And that's where we're looking at right here. It's already rolling out. And now they're going to be like, hey, that card is weird and big because we made it that way on purpose. Well, guess what? Here is something you can use instead.
If you got the vaccine, you're probably thinking, now what? How can I show the world that I am vaccinated? How can I be
I'm sure thinking that
normalcy in my life? Well, now you can wear the Immuniband adjustable bracelet. It's the only secure way to take your vaccine card with you wherever you go.
And now you should be hearing in your mind Klaus Schwab in 2016 on a French show that I played for you with subtitles, where he says that at first we'll start with wearables and then it will transition to brain chips and eventually we'll be able to do blah, blah, blah. Right. As a matter of fact, this was a conversation. Why? Because they were writing about this back then. They wrote about this all the way back in 2002, altering evolution with nanotechnology, which is literally happening right now with nanolipid particles and nano vaccines and nano everything happening around you. It's literally happening in real time. It's incredible. And this is the first step, or at least in regard to the wearable, which transitions into everything else, which was, again, something that we were told was completely ridiculous and would never happen. Now it's like, well, for your convenience, of course. And all the people that said it was fake news will be like, you're crazy. This is just because it's easy now. It's a vaccine card. It's on paper, but I like this because it's convenient, right? And then when they say, oh, well, here, this can go right under your skin, and it's very easy, like the Perfusa chip. Oh, you're crazy. This is just convenience, right? It's constant. Even somebody who knows that we turned out to be right about this in this moment will still look at you and be like, oh, you said injected. Oh, you're crazy. Because they've been told that's how they should think. Despite the Perfusa chip being very real and actively discussed around vaccination right now. Crazy.
With whoever you'd like. Each bracelet has a unique QR code that is PIN protected. And its distinctive design lets the world know that you've been vaccinated. So let's band together to beat this pandemic. One step, one vaccination, and one ImmuniBand bracelet at a time. Get yours today at ImmuniBand.com.
ImmuniBand.com. Might have been a low volume. I apologize for that, but it's the same point. It's a band that you wear on your wrist with a QR code that traces back to your information around this, which is just, it is a vaccine passport. That's exactly what that is. There's no way around that. That's the world they're creating. But good news, but I still argue that we shouldn't jump ahead of ourselves here, is that it's been announced that Israel's health minister is stopping the vaccine passport that's already started, by the way, right? The green passes are, I mean, we're looking at lawn chairs that say vaccinated only in Israel. It's very clear this has already happened and at the very least probably produced what they were already trying to produce. So that's maybe one reason why they're rolling it back, right? But it is clearly being rolled back, at least they're saying that. And I said, well, this is interesting. Even if we have made enough of a difference to stop this in its tracks today, don't for one second think that they'll have given up on this, on the long sought agenda. It will begin again from a different angle, or even the same with a different excuse, right? Stay the course, guys. We cannot give up on fighting back against this because they're going to keep trying. It's still going to go forward. It's just going to be or whether it's going to be some new pandemic that pops up somewhere else and then all of a sudden we need it and everyone's scared back into place, or it's going to be some new iteration or climate change or whatever else they use it for. It's the same direction of the biosecurity state, the technocracy direction, the Great Reset. That is the end game here, and we can see it. It's very clear. Here's their article. Coronavirus, green pass, purple standard, restrictions to be removed. But we'll see what happens. So it's a positive, but do not lose sight on what's happening, because maybe this was the plan the whole time. Maybe the plan was to get you worked up about this, roll it back, and then use that momentum to do something else. This is not a hard thing. They have documents that outline exactly how this is supposed to go, right? And this is important. Yay, back to normal, right? No, not even close. But this brings us over into let me see here. 152. Okay, let me do this. What do you guys want to hear about? I feel like I want to do one more topic, and I'll save some of these for the rest. I know I said I would get to that. I won't forget the clip. I said I would get to the brain disease one, but that's a reasonably quick one. I could go through that quick. So let's do this. You want to hear about the brain disease discussion as it relates to COVID-19? Do you want to hear about the digital kind of evolution we're seeing, which leads into the document that talks about not the last pandemic and how they're going to transition everything forward? Or do you want to hear about the new Ebola vaccine and the nanotech vaccine? What do you think? First one to respond. Give me a comment. Somebody. I'm looking over these two. Let's see. Brilliant, their problem. Come on, somebody give me, I know there's a delay. Give me a topic to go forward on, and I'm going to do one more. That's it. Brain disease. Okay. You got me in super you first. Orwell says all of it. Well, we'll see. I'm probably going to do that once I get into the next one that's perfectly in line. All right. So jumping over to the brain disease discussion. Here we are. This is actually really interesting because I've talked about this for a long time. This is from India, where in my mind this started, not this article, but the first, the, I'm going to mispronounce it. I have it in the next slide. Pradesh, something Pradesh. This location that had a trial, vaccine trial, and then had this weird disease that happened everywhere and nobody could explain. And by the way, it was exactly the kind of stuff we're seeing today around the COVID-19 injection. Exactly. From the weird sickness to the, I mean, everything. It's just crazy. But starting with this, here is something from May 1st, 2021. COVID news, Scott's in hospital with severe headaches and side effects after vaccine jabs. Now, this may not sound severe, but when you dig into the story, it's not just headaches. These are neurological issues. The Scots are being struck down with severe headaches and needing hospital care after these jabs. Right? Imagine having such a severe headache that you can't even think straight and it never goes away. Right? That's what these people are dealing with. And I'm saying that they confirmed the NIH Greater Glasgow Clyde has confirmed staff are caring for, quote, a very small number of patients, right? It's so funny how every one of these things, very, very rare, very small group, we got to add these up at some point and laugh about how many are very, very rare, experiencing unpleasant neurological side effects from the nationwide vaccination program. The Health Trust stresses the benefits of getting projected, they mean protected, but it's funny that they say projected, against the deadly virus still outweigh the risks. And it's so funny that any outlet that says that when they don't need to is somebody that knows trying to deceive you in some way, in my opinion. We don't know the benefits and we don't know the risks. And so that makes them liars. If we're still studying the risks, as in children and heart problems and all these different things we keep seeing or everything else, we don't know them because we're still finding them. And if the benefits and we're still researching the efficacy and the safety, which we just proved to you, then we don't know the benefits either. So stop saying that. The only reason they keep saying the benefits outweigh the risk is because that is a literal exact thing that needs to be met to argue that this is one of the things justifying emergency use authorization. That's why they keep saying it on repeat. The NHS has been honing in on neurological side effects. Right at the top one. On neurological side effects from the jabs after AstraZeneca, that after it was linked to blood clots. And linked, they keep saying that linked because they think that sounds like it's not verified. It's 100% proven, 100% that it can. To what degree, we can talk about that. Norway proved it. Your government in the United States acknowledged it, and we've seen them since. And it's obvious: vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia. It's clear. Quote: "This is a recognized but very uncommon side effect." I just love it. Just keep doing that, but. This is interesting that we keep seeing neurological stuff. What do you know? Certainly relates to some kind of genetic, you know, we've seen a lot of these neurological stuff issues aligned with this injection. But here's the point from May 5th. Doctors investigate mystery brain disease in Canada. Mystery brain disease. Really? There's all sorts of reasons why this wouldn't be a mystery, or at the very least that you should investigate the new experimental injection that everyone's gotten right around the time frame this new mystery thing starts popping up. Right? But no. And realize that there's more than, like, just the blood clots alone could lead to all sorts of brain disorders and brain issues and neurological problems, all of it. This is from April 20th, 2021. Families frustrated by the wall of silence on the brain disease, right? So during this whole process, they just won't talk to people about it. Why? Because I think there's something very strange going on here. But here is a month-old article from March 30th, 2021. Mystery brain disease or disorder baffles Canadian doctors, right? Just showing you this has been ongoing. And of course, what they even talk about in this discussion is Crutchfield-Jacob disease, how it's similar. And even some doctors are saying, well, and we've talked about this already, seems to be very similar. Now, we've already discussed this in the context of the prions disease. But before I get to that, and this is where it's, you know, bringing this full circle, what I realized was, this is exactly the kind of thing we saw in India in Andhra Pradesh. Pradesh. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. Now, Lisa Winter writes this. It is in December 9th, 2020. I did a whole show about this and was called crazy. And I didn't say it was a fact. I simply said this is interesting and they don't like critical discussion. Mystery illness cluster in India may be due to neurotoxins. So we have a neurological issue in the brain in regard to something. Right after there was a vaccine trial in the exact same, well, in the same province. Right? So why is this not being like, so we're seeing the same sort of thing. as the vaccines are being administered in Canada. It says, beginning on December 3rd or 5th, hundreds of people around the city began experiencing symptoms. There was no common thread between them, as the patients lived in various areas around town, had different water sources, were unrelated to one another, and represented a wide range of ages, according to multiple news sources. But remember, their common story after this was something in the water. Except they all had different water sources, were unrelated and lived in different areas, but generally around this province, and we're going to pretend like, oh, well, it was lead in the water or something. That was their argument at the end of this. And they left it there. It says, quote, we have tentatively identified the primary cause of this strange phenomenon, but it is not yet clear what is its source is and how and why it has happened. For instance, the chemicals were found in the bodies of the patients, but not in either water or any other food source. In either water or food source. Chemicals. And you realize when you dig into this that some of them are, in fact, neurotoxins like metals of some kind. Heavy metals, right? Well, they're searching for the possibility of that. But then what they found were these... my belief is we're talking about something, the same concept of the vaccination, of whether these things are the magnogenetic discussion or the metals that we know, as I've already shown you in past shows, are in fact in this, the nanoparticle actual metal discussion. So is it possible that this is the same thing? Human trials of COVID vaccine at this exact college... Andhra Pradesh, September 24th, right? And then the point is that December 9th, we see this all this stuff happening. Okay, so it's pretty interesting to think that this could be the case. Now, bringing it back to the concept of Canada, why are we not asking the question about what this is? Could it not be the same thing? The point is everything's being disregarded because if we decide it's even linked to COVID, we're going to be called crazy. But this brings us back to this we've brought up many times. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, all these mad cow discussion, prion's disease. COVID-19 RNA-based vaccines, which we're dealing with, and the risk of prion's disease. And the article, and this clearly shows you and their findings that this has a risk of causing this. I didn't have it highlighted, but it says the folding, it says known to cause ALS, front temporal lobe degeneration. Which what they're saying is this causes that. And this, if that happens, it's known to cause ALS, which we're talking about all sorts of neurological issues and all sorts of different things. Alzheimer's disease, other neurological degenerative diseases. How interesting is that? And that's exactly what we're pointing to over here and going, who knows what's going on over here? This is all found because of the injection. The vaccine. Furthermore, it says the spike protein created the translation of the vaccine RNA binds, and this is what's happening. That's causing that, which leads to these problems. I've gone into this many times before. It's all in there, and we're ignoring it because they don't want to talk about it. I just find that to be unbelievably obvious. Crazy. Now, I think I am going to skip over one thing and finish off with this discussion. I apologize for the one person I told about somebody I told I was going to get into that document. I will. I'm still going to talk about it. We're going to get into the digital discussion in another one. Very interesting parts, but this seems more connected to today's discussion. We'll wrap it up with this. This is Spiro, by the way. Welcome back to Twitter, Spiro. It's good to have him back. COVID 1984. Scientists unveil new Ebola virus vaccine design. They say, this is the exact alarming concept. Doesn't seem to be the exact same technology as the specifically MOD RNA, which is what these vaccines are, modified mRNA. It's right in the Pfizer documentation, right in the Moderna documentation, but we'll just say mRNA so we don't confuse people. The point is, it's the same thing in an alarming way, and you'll see what I mean, that this is happening now around all of this, and as they do something for COVID-19 as well. Scientists unveil new Ebola virus vaccine design. In designing the vaccine, the researchers also modified the outer spike protein to be more stable than the normal wild-type version found in actual Ebola virus. It tested mice and rabbits. They showed that this stabilized version elicited virus neutralizing antibodies more strongly than the wild type glycoprotein used in the prior Ebola vaccine approaches. Now, right out of the gate, this sounds like the same kind of manipulation that could potentially lead to the antibody dependent enhancement issue. And that's why, and my point is there, and this is just the start of it. The problem is that they're
again, even if it's different, they're using different manipulative technologies based on things that have yet to even shown to be safe and continuing to go forward. Here it says under a new approach, and you won't be shocked by this, this nanoparticle design, because you know they're going to use it to alter our evolution. They told us 20 years ago, no one's paying attention today, is distinctively different from other nanoparticle platforms. Oh, what do you know? Another platform. No, we're not even talking about vaccines anymore. We're talking about a platform, a nanoparticle platform, so we can pump in different things from different day to day without any new safety trials, of course, which they've told us, and we can just pump out new injections based on the platform, which is the same thing Moderna's doing. You think this isn't connected? You're smarter than that. Zhu explains in his team's design the genetic codes of the optimized glycoprotein, the nanoparticle forming unit, the locking domain, and the T-cell epitope are all contained in a single piece of DNA. In cells, this DNA generates a spike protein chain that can self-assemble, forming the right structure and associating with other identical chains to create a virus-like protein ball with multiple layers. Okay, so again, you create the problem, the potential problem, where this could create a situation where it is either looked at as the problem that it could possibly create your the situation where it could attack your body, or you could argue that this could, I mean, look, I could theorize all day long. The reality is that this is the same kind of stuff we're watching go awry right now. And they're telling you that this is something that is artificial, that they've created, that basically mimics this virus, that then, and by the way, let's not forget about the nanotechnology virus mimicking discussion in regard to Charles Lieber. I mean, this sounds like a lot like what we're talking about here, does it not? But it's saying forming the right structure and then chaining with other things that were already in your body. It just sounds like it could go awry in a lot of scary ways, but I won't theorize because, you know, look, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not any of the things that would be making this, but I have researched this extensively. And I have talked to many experts who have told me that these things are, I mean, this is, in my opinion, what we're doing right here with this is the same thing we were doing with bioweapons in the labs in regarding to Ebola and everything else. They're using these things to create something that could go awry, that could go wrong. We're watching it right now, as Del Bigtree talks about, that this could potentially lead to an extinction level event, and they don't care. That's crazy alarming. But so what I think this to me is the kind of, this is like the next generation work in the open of this kind of, you know, genomics, right? They're playing God. His team already has used the nanoparticle platform to create a COVID-19 vaccine candidate. What do you know about that? Which has shown in animal models that it can induce a powerful antibody response, both to SARS and SARS-CoV-2, and has also shown it to be effective against variants. It's a one catch-all, right? And why? Because it's a platform. Because it's a pump in the genetic code and they pump out the instructions to how to make this, and they start making them. Oh, that's a point I forgot to make before as well, that the emergency use authorization for, where were we? Oh, up here. For, let's just say Moderna, 1218. Right? Do you remember the Moderna? Let's see if I can get that to pop up still. No, that's the wrong one. Hold on. That one? Okay, perfect. I'm glad this keeps popping up. So remember, oh, I forgot that they added all this. So now it's way at the bottom. You have to click this like 7 times to get this information. Shocking, because this is the important part. That if you go to the bottom and you quickly find out that this is basically impossible unless they knew this was going to happen. January 11th, 2020. Chinese authorities shared, this is Moderna, shared the genetic sequence of the novel coronavirus. Well, how kind of them. This sharing with Moderna. Right, so Moderna has their nice little platform all set up. January 11th, they send the genetic code, not the isolated information, not genetic material, the genetic sequence on a computer. 2 days later, on January 13th, 2020, the NIH and Moderna research team had finalized their sequence already. That's the mRNA-1273 that has since then been put in people's arms and tested. 2 days, Moderna mobilized toward clinical manufacture. And they disclosed their intent to begin their trials of safety or phase 1 study. So 2 days, they're able to get a code on a computer and create vaccinations or injections of some kind of weird genetic type. And then in, what is it? Did I say 13th? Okay, so in 5 days, 5 days later, they've already got emergency authorization? Seriously? Realize how incredibly alarming that is. How is it possible that we're talking 8 days, 9 days. What are we talking about? Oh, excuse me, January 11th, right? So going back to this, 18th, okay? We're talking about 7 days here. And in 7 days from when they got code on a computer screen, we're pretending that they then suddenly had emergency authorization and that they could prove that to the U.S. government? That it was safe and effective in 7 days? You are all being lied to, and we all know that. Everyone's being lied to, and this is absolutely staggering that this is still happening. Blows me away. Now, I sort of lost my place here. Where was I? Oh, right. So we're on the platform discussion. That's the same idea. So this is a new platform, right? Same concept, but it's a slightly different variation of it, but it's still using nanotechnology, so it achieves the same goal, I would argue. And what they're doing is creating another version of this same kind of genetically altered protein delivering DNA version of the same kind of weird manipulative concept. And it's saying that it can fight all these things and new variants. Why not? That's crazy to me. And this shows you that they're jumping forward, taking 30 steps forward at a time before we've even established the first step. This is the plan, guys. Scares me. Here's the actual script research article about that specific Ebola vaccine. You can read more in depth about it if you'd like. As always, I include that so you can come to your own conclusions and not just agree with what I'm saying. But here's something interesting. They share in that article a link to what they're, you know, just what are nanoparticle-based vaccines. Now, there wasn't a bunch in here that I wanted to share. Let's just start with this, since this was the first, this is the point that I want, this got me thinking about something else. And this is where we'll finish. But down here it says, nanoparticles boost vaccine immunity. Oh, and this was the part about the gold. And this is, again, I've talked about this in the past, or the metal and different nano discussions. Various types of nanoparticles are associated with inherent physical properties that can activate an immune response. Gold, carbon, dendrimers, polymers, liposome, nanoparticles have all been found to induce cytokine and antibody responses. So we're talking about all these things being potentially used in the concepts of these vaccines. These unique characteristics have therefore expanded the potential utility of nanoparticles from delivery vehicles for vaccines to adjuvants that can enhance the immunogenicity of vaccine candidates. Very interesting. But the real point of this was what this got me thinking about. And this is about where the numbers lie. As of late September 2020, this article says, and this is written on, where was it? Come on. For crying out loud. I can't, this drives me crazy when they don't post these things. No comments. That's crazy. Well, this is reasonably new because this is something new that was announced, right? This is May 13th. Does it say right there? No, where's the time? That doesn't even have a date. That's so strange. Anyway, because you can see the date on this one's right here. Anyway. The point was, as of late September 2020, the novel severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2, was responsible for the death of over 1 million people worldwide. Okay, so as of late September 2020, 1 million worldwide. Okay, that, you know, sounds alarming without context. In 2016, though, before SARS-CoV-2 emerged, the WHO reported that, guess what, approximately 3.2 million deaths were directly caused by only lower respiratory infections. 1.4 million of which were due to tuberculosis. Now, there's 2 points there. One is the same point we made in the past. If 1.4 million people died in 1 year from tuberculosis, why weren't we blocked down for the tuberculosis pandemic? It's a hell of a lot more than we're dealing with now. It's contagious. What are we talking about? See, it's not about the reality here, guys. If that's death. So it can lead to that much more death, which means by definition, it's far more dangerous than what we're dealing with today. They don't care. It's about the media and how they frame it. If they told you tuberculosis was a new strain and we were all going to die, well, then we would be living in a similar situation. But they just chose not to focus on it. But just taking away the 1.4 million from the 3.2, even just saying, let's just call it 2 million. That's double what they said died from as of late September 2020. And that's specifically from lower respiratory infections. So it got me thinking, what other things are lower respiratory infections? And what does that add up to today? Well, you'll quickly find out that that's all the things that suddenly don't exist anymore. So then you start realizing, wait a minute, if 3.2 million deaths were caused by these things that are all kind of non-existent today, is that where all the deaths are coming from? Certainly could be. And then you ask the question, if it's only 1 million people were died worldwide, according to this, and just 3.2 million alone in the United States, or excuse me, in general, it just seems it's a very, very different number that challenges whether, one, this is even as severe as they continue to say it is when you compare it to other things we're dealing with, such as tuberculosis, or the fact that I am convinced that we, and by the way, we know this. We know they're combining flu and pneumonia with the number. It's been admitted to and been exposed many times over. In this document, as many others, health is more than influenza. As the WHO points out many times, that is simply a culture of fear. And that what's happening is that people, experts, public health threats stem primarily from disease advocacy by influenza experts, and that they were all too happy. This welcome boon, the pharmaceutical industry and the media, and they're manipulating information. This is from the WHO in 2011. I was going to read this for the other part of this, but it's relevant to this discussion anyway. That they knew that the CDC and these different groups are dishonest, that they lie for private interests. And even the WHO and the HHS pointed it out and called them out years ago, and then just got real quiet. But as it says, the recently published report of the CDC, or excuse me, the Disease Control Priorities Project, DCPP, has estimated that lower respiratory infections, the very thing they just talked about, in general caused 3.7 million deaths in the world in 2001. 3.7 million. Just so we're clear on that. It's a lot. Okay, so right now, according to the Worldometer, we're only at 3.4 from COVID alone. So they claim. United States, only 600,000. Okay, so going forward, here are the medical news or the medical breakdown of what is under the category of lower respiratory tract, or rather the most important ones: bronchitis, pneumonia, bronchiolitis, and tuberculosis. So tuberculosis, we can argue 1.4 million, right? And they just ignore that for some reason. But I actually do have a point about that. But so anyway, so these are the ones we're talking about. So jumping over here, tuberculosis death, 2020. The numbers were based on WHO's models, which estimate an additional 200,000 tuberculosis deaths in 2020. So I'm curious, and I was unable to find whether or not this has been a breakdown or a decrease, but I was able to find it. Oh, I did find, that's right. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused on, oh, that's right. It was the other one. I went through all these and tried to find all the, it's, you know how infuriatingly impossible it is right now to find these the statistics of anything through 2020 that the Google algorithm, the Google algorithms even moderately think you might be trying to use to counter narratives. Like, it's so obvious how you can't find anything around any of this stuff. But anyway, I was able to find some stuff that I found was very relevant. Well, guess what? In 2020, tuberculosis incident decreased by 20%. Isn't that interesting? 20% lower than 2019. And even though it's only been about 2-3% difference throughout the years, but suddenly in the COVID timeframe, 20% it decreases. What do you know? How about you want to bet that's because 20% of that went into COVID-19? Now, sure, some of them could actually be people that had COVID or whatever, however you want to look at that within their narrative, understand. But 20% shows you something changed. It says the steep decrease incidents during COVID pandemic might be the result of reduced transmission in undetected cases, right? Of course, the same old narrative. But we also have the idea of flu and pneumonia, which we've talked about, that is very obviously gone. Like laugh out loud, ridiculous, gone. Here is the entire year so far during this process of flu, right? This is 2021. It's basically gone. Look at this. It's just nothing there, right? Here is, as I've shown you before, 2019 to 2020. And you can see clearly that there's a big, and by the way, what's funny is here, where was it? Oh, going back far enough, you can see that, look, there's no purple. In 2018, 2019, they didn't have a purple. And then they just, over the years, add purple because it kept getting worse. And it's like, just funny, they clearly, because the vaccines are working well for you, right? Clearly, they need to add a whole other category for danger stuff. Back to the point, nothing happening 21 to 2021. 2021. Then you can see clearly at the same time frame, this is crazy bad in 2019 to 2020, but then just dies off pretty much. Then you can go back to this one and see again that it's that what's interesting that how isolated it seems to be. But the point, guys, to make this clear, is that we know as a matter of fact that flu and pneumonia are combined, as they state on their own information, and they keep going, well, flu doesn't exist this year. Hooray. So the point of the information is if tuberculosis dropped 20%, if we know that lower respiratory illness is causing 3.4 million worldwide, and we're seeing 3.7, and we're seeing 3.4 million total, you need to ask the question, if these things are disappearing, is that where it's going? And I find that to be a very obvious thing to consider. And people just won't ask themselves these questions. Here is what COPD, which is essentially bronchitis, but it kind of, there's a few more things that apply to it. I think it lists, where is it? It's right here. It's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. In 2014, yes, it was the fourth leading cause of death in the United States. 2014, it says approximately 142,000 individuals died from COPD. Then we jump forward just from 2014. Mosey on over to 2019. COPD was now the third leading cause of death worldwide, accounting 3.23 million deaths that year. 2.3 million, right? So this is just in the US, 142,000. But if we're talking about something that serious, third leading cause of death that has dropped off 20%, I think we're seeing some pretty obvious manipulation here. I'm digging into this because it's a new one, but the flu is the most important. The flu is clearly something that's just been dropped, and they're adding that somewhere. I think it's very obvious we're seeing this manipulated. Now, I want to ask about, you know, what else is being added to this? How much more is being manipulated? I think it's a valid question that we need to ask ourselves. And what else is being added to it? What else is zeroed out right now? What other sort of like non, you know, like things that we're not really paying attention to that add another 100,000 are just being ignored right now? You know, there's a lot of them. There's all sorts of illnesses that are just being lumped in with COVID-19. Now, I think if we actually have enough and the full breadth of the data and enough people to research it, I'm willing to bet that that will add up to something like what we're looking at now. Just a thought. Now, I'm going to end with this clip today, and I'm going to remember to include this discussion of the digital evolution here on the next show. Don't worry, I will talk about that. But I'm going to end with this clip because it's important to watch. It's actually a great clip, and it's something that is well worth your time. Let me actually see if I have it here, and I'll do it this way. Let's see. I thought I had that downloaded. You know what? I guess I forgot. That's frustrating. Very casual show today. Well, shoot. Okay, let me just do this then.
Regulatory effect, these are kind of written and codified into the regulatory rules. Well, the US FDA regulatory guidance on vaccines, and there have been modern vaccines. You don't have to pick the old ones. I mean, we've had modern vaccines, shingles vaccines, hepatitis B, meningococcal vaccines, demand a minimum of 2 years of safety data. 2 years by regulatory effect. These are kind of written and codified into the regulatory rules for the manufacturers. That was all thrown out and said 2 months for COVID, 2 months. So 2 months of observational data. This idea that we could vaccinate people that were not even tested in the trials, that has never been done before. We've never just thrown a vaccine at somebody without having any data, none. So the very first pregnant woman that was vaccinated here in the United States, it was done with no knowledge of safety and no knowledge of efficacy.
Exactly.
And the argument that we've heard, is, well, COVID-19 is a bad illness. 600,000 people have died. The vaccine could help them. We should give it a shot. Come on, we should just give it a shot. While that 600,000 died, I've already told you 85% of that was preventable with early treatment, which was actively suppressed and squashed.
85%.
And not only that, is if this vaccine can help them, the vaccine better be safe. It better be safe. And my comments on the vaccine are safety, safety, safety. Let's see it. Let's see it. And Americans, just like the Americans should have been getting weekly updates on treatment innovations, Americans should have been getting weekly updates on vaccine safety. very important, weekly updates from our federal officials on safety. Super important. Those two things are probably the two largest acts of malfeasance in all of medical regulatory history. It will go down in history of malfeasance, wrongdoing by those of authority. How come there was no updates on treatment and no promotion of early treatment to reduce hospitalization and death? And now when we release the vaccine, why are there no safety updates? Why are there no attempts for risk mitigation in terms of making the vaccine program safer? How do we have all these vaccines? How do we know that we can vaccinate? Years of safety data. Before a vaccine has ever been injected into a pregnant woman, it's probably been tested for decades before we try it in a pregnant woman. We would never out of the box take a brand new technology that's never been tested before, ever. And we know that the vaccine technology produces the dangerous spike protein. It produced the Wuhan spike protein, the spicule on the ball of the virus itself, which damages blood vessels and causes blood clotting. And all of them do. We would never unleash that into a pregnant woman's body. Americans have to understand something is very wrong. What's going on? What's going on now in the world? These are examples, are clear-cut examples of wrongdoing that is at such a high level. The groupthink is in the wrong direction in such a consistent and overwhelming way that people are being harmed in an extraordinary fashion. I think it's about what the vaccine means. And Whitney Webb gets credit for this. Back in April, she said, aha, I figured this out. This is what globalists have been waiting for. They've been waiting for a way of marking people. That you get in a vaccine, you're marked in a database. And this can be used for trade, for commerce, for behavior modification, all different purposes. And you've seen it right here in Dallas. They've announced, you can't go to a Dallas Mavericks game unless you're vaccinated. You've had people say, listen, you have passports. You had colleges today announce that they're not going to give any credit to natural immunity. Every scientist in the world knows that the natural immunity is way better than the vaccine immunity.
Exactly.
If it's about COVID, why don't we have COVID recovered go to the Mavericks games? Why don't we have COVID recovered people freely go to college? Well, why do we have to have faulty vaccine immunity be the priority and have natural immunity not count? See, these types of things make me think that Whitney Webb is correct. This is actually about marking. The vaccine is a way of marking people. It's a way of starting to assert efforts to create compliance, behavior control. Don't forget, the vaccine is just a starter. Now there's going to be updates. There's going to be boosters. They're already prepping people for this. There's going to be more. The vaccine manufacturers are all linked. They're all uniquely indemnified. What medical product is there indemnification where something happens to you, you don't have any recourse? You know, a woman gets vaccinated, pregnant woman. She has no maternal fetal rights. Something happens to her or her baby. She's out of luck. This is extraordinary what Americans are doing. It's absolutely extraordinary what's being thrust upon us now.
And your COVID-19 vaccine, you're going to want to listen to this. The Red Cross says anyone who has received their COVID-19 vaccine cannot donate convalescent plasma to help other COVID-19 patients in hospitals. That plasma is made up of antibodies from people who have recovered from the virus, but the vaccine wipes out those antibodies, making the convalescent plasma ineffective in treating other COVID-19 patients.